With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
And you're listening to Hell in a Cell Radio.
The Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen.
On a very controversial edition. Dan, I'm walking out. I've had enough.
Me too. That's it.
Well, welcome to another episode of HIAC Talk Radio. I'm, of course, the host. I'm the Dean of Credibility. Double D, you can find me at Folsom County on the Twitter. With me, as always, is my co-host, the man who now has broken Brett Favre's streak for consecutive appearances.
Yes.
It is now time to introduce to everyone out there the above-average comedian, Dan the Man Colachico.
Hey, good evening, everyone. You can follow me on the Twitter. I think we should call it the Twitter from now on.
It is the Twitter.
The Twitter and the Facebook. Dan Law 83 and the Monday Night Show, the Hockey Podcast, with the... what is she? The Angry Spatula. She's my fiance, but she's the Angry Spatula. Obey Puck. Monday nights at 9, follow us on Twitter at Obey Puck Show.
We got to work on condensing that. You're getting it out now, but we got to work on condensation, Dan.
Here. I'm Dan. Follow me on Twitter at DanLow83. Podcast Obey the Puck's on it Monday. Follow us Obey the Puck Show.
Still something. There's a little too much fluff.
I'll just speed it up, man.
A little sizzle. Too much sizzle with that steak, Dan. Sizzle.
You know what?
We don't have Omega here, so we're kind of flying without a training wheel, so to say.
Our co-pilot. I'm just the guy that serves the peanuts and the drinks.
And
our co-pilot's not here.
I had a wonderful time with Omega Squad last night. We're going to get to UFC once we're done. Well, let me just talk about the show, because we got a really big show here tonight, Dan.
Big show.
In about 15 minutes from now, we are going to be talking once again, Dan, to the Greek god Papadon as he comes back. It's been a one-year absence, and he is back here tonight. And my goodness, I was looking over his matches that he has had since his last appearance on this very show. And this man has done a lot, including a match with Goldust.
He's been a working.
He has been working in California. He went out west, young man.
He went west, young man?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, he did. Not only that, Dan, we're also going to have a farewell interview. Well, not really a farewell, but it's his last interview as, well, he's not even a wrestler anymore, but it's Rory Mondo, who retired at Cage of Death 15 this past December. We're going to find out why he retired at such a young, he's only 23, Dan.
Jesus.
Most guys are thinking of how to get to the next, he's done.
Ugh.
Left it all
behind.
Yeah, but
when did he start?
Well, he started when he was 14, Dan.
I was going to say, he's got a good, like, seven, eight years in it.
DJ Hyde was beating the snot out of him when he was still in junior high.
Oh, man.
He's the only youngster that took a lariat at age 15, I'll tell you that much.
I'm sure that's on the resume.
It might be. Took a lariat at age...
Yeah, gave me a lariat. Oh.
Well, we're going to find out all about that. We're going to find out. He kind of got me. he kind of got me interested because he said that documentary that he's putting out, he's going to talk about all those backstage politics. Maybe we can get a little sliver, a little sampling of that. But that's coming up 90 minutes from now. We will be talking with Rory Mondo.
You know, I was saying the mileage that Nick Mondo has, you know, all that mileage that he has, that Rory has, and he's only 23. Oh, my God.
Well, that's when Thick Nick retired, my friend.
Oh, man.
Following in his mentor's footsteps. You're very dramatic.
What a waste I've had.
Not necessarily, Dan.
Absolutely a waste.
It's like a fine wine. We're just waiting.
Oh, I age well with time.
Exactly. We're just waiting for we're waiting for the time to be sprung upon the masses. We're also going to be talking, well, actually pre-recorded, Dan, about 10 o'clock. I'm hoping that this goes off.
Probably.
We're going to be talking about UFC. That's pre-recorded from last night. And Omega and I talked about the Benson Henderson fight that happened over the weekend. We preview UFC 169, and we talk about the retirement of Pat Barry, Dan. Pat Barry.
You okay?
That's all I can say.
Are you
all
right?
All I can say about that. Pat right. Barry. An up and down career. More on that when we get to it. Yeah.
There's more to it than this.
Oh my goodness, is there ever? But we really kind of put it in order there. Now, Dan, of course, what I want to start out with, we're going to save this CM Punk story for later. If people want to listen to that, after Rory Mondo, I think we're going to talk about this. Not the Rory Mondo situation. There isn't a situation there. We're going to talk about the CM Punk situation.
Cool. Good way to do it.
But you know what, Dan? You know what else?
What else? Has something else happened?
I'll tell you what else happened.
What happened?
Well, it appears I've been fired. Well, as long as I'm no longer working here, let me tell you something. You know what really grinds my gears? You, America. You.
Like most babies smell like butter, Dan. This one smelled like no other, and I'll tell you what.
This has been the best start ever.
This whole Daniel Bryan thing is out of hand. I'm just going to say that, Dan, and let me explain myself. People are saying they're not going to buy the network now. They're upset. Upset. A lot of bluster over this. You know what? Get over it.
Yeah,
it's like if you saw, it's the same thing to me. These people that get the Star Wars special edition and they're upset that Greedo shot first. Get over it.
Well, that is pretty upsetting, actually.
It is.
Don't get me started on Greedo, Dean.
Who cares?
And then the young Obi-Wan, then the young Anakin Skywalker replaces David Prowse. Oh my God.
Who cares? And it wasn't David Prowse, by the way.
Oh.
No.
Different actor that stayed in at the end of Return?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
I care even less.
David Prowse has never seen. But that said, Dan, this whole Daniel Bryan thing, the internet wrestling community on Sunday just lost their minds over the fact that Daniel Bryan's not in the Royal Rumble. Your thoughts, Dan, on this?
Well, first of all, was he even advertised?
No.
For the Royal Rumble, right, okay. Now,
not once.
As I was watching, I was like...
Oh. Nor was it ever inferred, Dan.
Right, right, but as I was watching, I was like, oh, that's interesting, they're not going to... Daniel Bryan's not going to come out. But when the show ended, I didn't think anything of it. I was like, oh, Batista won. That's exactly as I expected. Blah, 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 no harm, no foul. And then I looked at Twitter, I was like, oh, boy, okay. The thought Daniel Bryan didn't even cross my mind.
A lot of people, this was like Pearl Harbor, Dan. They people losing their minds, Dan.
I mean, not to mention the fact that Roman Reigns is overlooked.
Well, what do you mean by that?
Well, everybody's thought about how Daniel Bryan's got screwed and can't believe Batista went one and Daniel Bryan. And what about the performance of Roman Reigns the whole time?
I you know, honestly, and this may take people back, that I have a different opinion than most.
No.
But Roman Reigns eliminated 12 people. Great.
Well, yeah.
But he was in a battle royal, Dan. What kind of performance do you really have in a battle
royal? I don't know.
He was booked, obviously.
Never been in one.
Yeah, but I'm just saying he's booked to eliminate 12 people. Good for him. I didn't see the only thing that I can take away from that. If you want to talk about people, and Omega Squad and I talked about this on the minisode that came out, the biggest star of the Royal Rumble was Bray Wyatt, by far. Everybody's talking about Roman Reigns, and sure, he got the rub from Batista. He was in there. They want you to remember those two nosing off. It's probably going to be a feud later on down the road. But my whole thing is Bray Wyatt was the star. Not only did he defeat the hottest guy in a great match, by the way, on the roster right now, and we've been saying it for months now, the hottest guy on the roster, he's also rubbing elbows with the face of the company by the time his evening's over, Dan.
No, I agree. That not only was that match amazing, was it Ring of Honor style, was it? Would you call that?
I wouldn't. People were, but
yeah, okay.
People were goofy.
That's why I was waiting to ask you. I was like, I didn't get any of that.
There weren't 25 false finishes, Dan.
Right. Right. But I think they said a lot with Bray going over on Daniel Bryan as far as Bray Wyatt.
Well, certainly.
For months we talked about, like, well, maybe it's not going anywhere. It's like, well, it might be going somewhere. Here's my summary of the whole thing. This whole thing was planned. They're doing it. I don't think there was any change leading up to Raw. I think this is the way it was supposed to go in the first place. That's just my opinion. I think they're working us. I think they're working all of us, and this is the way it was supposed to go. Go ahead. I lost my train of thought, Dean.
But I think that there could have been a switch from CM Punk. It's been rumored CM Punk was taking on Triple H. And perhaps one of the reasons he was upset was that they were switching the match to Daniel Bryan, and that was the rewrite. Obviously, the face-off that those two had at the beginning of Raw, again, foreshadowing, which WWE does a pretty good job with, I think.
Oh, yeah. I loved, by the way the internet reacted, and then you tweeted about it live during Raw, Triple H's reaction to the audience. Did somebody not get what they wanted last night?
Beautiful moment.
Beautiful. Aww. I loved it.
Beautiful
because,
moment.
Because I can't tell you how much, like I said, the Royal Rumble ended. I was like, that's the way it was going to go. That's it. I didn't think twice, three times about it. And then I just saw all these reactions, started retweeting it.
Now,
I thought it was beautiful.
Dan, I was asleep when the Royal Rumble took place. I watched the replay.
Oh.
About 11:30 at night, so
I did not know that.
When I woke up, I grab my tablet, I'm flipping through the responses, and I'm like, oh, Batista won, that's interesting. Very predictable. That was my first reaction. And as I'm flipping through, I read reaction after reaction of Daniel Bryan got screwed. And I'm like, well, was he even in it? How did he get screwed? And, oh, he wasn't in it. Well, he was never advertised. Just get over yourselves, people. They're going to pull the trigger eventually. I don't know when. Hopefully by Survivor Series.
Yeah, but the great thing is, as we talked about, we talked a little bit about it off air, is the longer they don't pull the trigger, the better it's going to be in the long run, I think.
That's debatable. People may stop caring. However, I will
I don't know.
Well, I will concede to this point, Dan. If you think about it, Zack Ryder, they listened to crowd reaction and they pulled the trigger much too soon. And now his career is in shambles. Ziggler, they listened to popular opinion with Ziggler, and now he's an afterthought back on the mid-card treadmill.
I agree with you as far as Zack Ryder. That kind of came and went, but I really wish Ziggler was still in the top matches.
Well, he's not.
I really
Dan,
do.
And it's time to move on. It's time to call.
That was quick.
Well, you know, it grinded my gears. I'm done grinding.
No, I think we said my final point.
We'll talk more about it, Dan.
No, this is a quick one, really. You can start dialing.
I'm ready. I just have to press the thing, but go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say I've never seen – I had to unfollow several people on Twitter because I've never seen so many negative reactions during a show, and the show hadn't even ended yet. That's all I want to say.
Fair enough.
Why order it if you're going to pitch about it?
Dan, language. If you're going to complain about it, Dan. Anyway, one man who has no filter, we're going to call him in right now.
I was going to say.
Hello.
Hello, is this the Greek god Papadon?
Yes, it is.
Hello. You are, of course, on the air with HIAC Talk Radio. How are you doing tonight, sir?
I am doing well, Double D. How are you?
I'm doing great. You're also here with Dan the Man Colachico.
Hey, what's up, Dan? How are they hanging?
How you doing, Papa Don?
I'm well. How about yourself?
Doing all right.
Omega Squad Chris Green could not make it this week, Papa Don.
It's his loss.
That's what we figured. Now, Papa Don, it's been quite some time since we had an opportunity to talk with you. I want to talk about all these amazing matches. First of all, you're going out to California quite regularly now. I mean, was this part of your plan to have more exposure getting out to California for Wrestling Cares and a few other promotions?
Listen, man, the life of an indie wrestler, as you know, you take the bookings as you can get them. I was very fortunate enough to catch the eye of Les Thatcher, and he liked my work. And he gave me a call, and he booked me for the first round. And I guess, you know, the rest wrote itself. So, you know, they saw something, and it gave me an opportunity to run with the ball, and I did. And I had a good run with Wrestling Cares, WCA. Unfortunately, I did not win the tournament. I made it to the semifinals, where I had a great match with Johnny Gargano. He did get the best of me that night, and he went on to win it. He won that against Adam Cole in the finals. So maybe next year when Wrestling Cares does their next year tournament, if I'm lucky enough and, you know, to be picked to be in it once again, you know, I'll do my best to steal the show like I always do and win the tournament.
Now, another thing that's happened since we last spoke, you lost the title to Chris Wilde. But you regained the title from VSK, and of course I'm talking about the ECWA heavyweight title. You subsequently lost it, but you had another title reign, so you are now a two-time ECWA heavyweight champion. Just your thoughts on winning that title again and the prestige that you brought to it yet again.
Well, obviously, you know, everybody wants to be the number one. Everyone wants to be the champ. Everybody wants to be sitting on top of the mountain. I was fortunate enough to win it twice. Bottom line is, you know, I like that belt. It's a very pretty belt. It fits very well around my waist. And, you know, unfortunately, I lost the belt to the Flying Hawaiian, which I still think he's Mexican, but that's another story, Kokoa, in a 42-minute match, which, you know, I've been told people are considering match of the year for ECWA, so I'm happy about that. And, you know, I mean, once I get the opportunity, I still have a rematch in my quote-unquote contract. So you never know. I might be a three-time champ down the road. Bottom line is, you know, nobody really knows what's going to happen until it happens.
The first time you had the – hey, it's been a long time, by the way. How you doing? The first time
I'm
had
good. Why are you all nervous for it, bro? Yeah, I can't see you. I can't smack. Fine.
I know. I still am afraid you're going to hit me through the microphone sometimes. The first time you had the title, this is the number I was looking for, 560 days. When you win it the second time and you don't have it as long, is it disappointing to you or does it mean just as much?
You know what? Everybody likes to be long-reigning champions. I mean, but fact of the matter is sometimes, you know, on any given night, anybody can win. And I've always said that, you know. I mean, the bottom line is one night I can, you know, decimate an opponent, and then the following week he can get the best of me. I mean, it's just the way the business goes. And it was just an honor just being a two-time champion and being a representative for that company. I'll tell you one thing, though, the fans are very happy that I was a champion once again. And, you know, once I won it for a second time, everyone was coming up to me saying that, you know, I should have never lost it, and you know how fans are, you know, and all that armchair booking, and you know, but it was cool, you know, it was an honor to be champion two times, and hopefully three times, you know. I mean, obviously, you know, no one knows what the future holds, but if the opportunity presents itself and it can happen, why not? I mean, like you said, I made that belt in that company, you know, very famous, just as it did for myself. It was kind of a mutual relationship between the two of us, mutual beneficial relationship, to where, you know, I was putting on good 20, 30-minute matches every month, and the people were getting their money's worth, so they were coming back. I mean, not to be, you know, to brag, because you know me, I'm Mr. Modest, but, you know, the next person who follows my lead has, some pretty big boots to fill, if you know what I mean, or kick pads to fill.
Well, if you were to win it for a third time, that would tie the all-time record. Of course, Cheetah Master is a three-time champion. Do you want to break that? Do you want to be a four-time champion the first time ever in ECWA?
Why not? I'm a man who likes to make records. I've done records. I've made records, winning back-to-back Wrestler of the Year, chosen by the fans. You know, like you said, 560-day title reign, which people are saying was the most, you know, dominant title reign since Simon Diamond, when he had the belt for, I think, maybe 800 days or 800 years or whatever it was back in the day. I mean, listen, man, the bottom line is I'm taking everything one match at a time. You know, I'm making headway in on the independents. I'm, like you said, I'm wrestling for Wrestling Cares in California. I wrestled for Championship Wrestling of Hollywood in California. I wrestled over at AWS in California, you know, wrestling for Extreme Rising again since they're up and running. Had a great match, stole the show with Hijo de Mysterio at the arena. March 1st, you know, it's been announced on their website that I'm wrestling Takaki Watanabe from New Japan Pro Wrestling, so I'm looking forward to that. I have on the 8th in Pittsburgh, Extreme Rising, they have an event called Black and Gold, which is I'm wrestling Jay Bradley, who's off of his run in TNA. You know, I'm doing well in NYWC. Me and Drew Gulak and I, we just had two killer matches back-to-back, month-to-month. We stole the show. He won once by tapping me out. I won the other one by tapping him out. So, you know, now Psycho Circus is around the corner for NYWC, which is their WrestleMania-type event, and they always draw an excess amount of people for that one show. So, you know, things are looking good. I can't complain.
I have one last ECWA question. 2012, you won the Super 8 tournament. Last year, you went to the finals against Damian Dragon. Is the Super 8 something that's still in your radar, or is that something beyond you now?
Super 8's a very prestigious tournament, and it's the original tournament. And, you know, the naysayers and the other people can say it's not what it used to be. Well, that's hogwash. You know, it's a bunch of shenanigans and propaganda. It's still a very reputable tournament. And you know what? If the opportunity presents itself where I could be in the Super 8 one more time, I would definitely love to be part of it. I mean, the bottom line is I want to be the person, you know, the Christopher Daniels won two of them. So, and I would love to tie that record, you know, maybe possibly break it and win three of them, you know, whatever the case may be. But, you know, if it doesn't present itself this year, you know, it'll present itself at another juncture. You know, I mean, this year, you know, I'm working on bigger and better things for myself, both inside and outside the ring, which I don't really talk about. But, you know, there's other bookings that I have coming up that I don't want to disclose off the bat because, you know, I don't know if it's official. I mean, it is official, but I don't know if the bookers want me to talk about it, so I won't speak about it. But you can expect bigger and better things and continued great things in the promotions I already work for and new promotions that I'm venturing into in 2014.
Well, one thing I did want to ask you about, you alluded to it a second ago, was the match against, well, the series of matches at this point against Drew Gulak. What was it like? Now, he's the CZW World Champion. Obviously, a lot of eyes are on this match, number one, because of who he is and the fact that you're in there with him. It's kind of a two-part question. I'll just ask this part first. What was it like getting in the ring with someone the caliber of Drew Gulak?
Well, you should be asking Drew Gulak, what was it like getting in the ring with the guy with the caliber of Greek God Papa Don?
Very true.
Very true.
He's not on the phone. He's not on the phone right now. But no, in all honesty, Gulak, he's a very talented individual and gets quote unquote it. And I said it before, you know, I say it again. When you get in the ring with somebody who gets it, magic happens 10 out of 10 times, especially when the other person gets it. So, for example, I get quote unquote it, not to brag. So does he. So when you put us in the ring, magic is going to happen. And, you know, the first match, you know, and people didn't know what to expect, and we stole the show. And the last match that we had this past weekend, we stole the show yet again. So, you know, and this is where I'm just, from what people were telling me, I'm not one to brag, you know, I'm Mr. Modest. But, you know, fact of the matter is, you know, I mean, you put me in the ring with a broom, I'll make the broom look good. But I obviously had the honor of having the favor given back to me by Drew Gulak because he made me look like $1 million. So wrestling Gulak, you know what? I could do it every night of the week, 7 days a week with my eyes closed if I had to because he's that talented, and I look forward to bigger and better matches. Who knows? We might even tie up in CZW one day. Who knows? You know?
Well, that's the perfect segue because I was this next question deals with just that. DJ Hyde and a contingent of some CZW guys have been going up there, David Starr, Chris Yerbert, people of that nature. Has there been any offers extended for you to possibly be in CZW in the near future? Because it just seems a natural. You even wrestled DJ Hyde in the past year. So any offers? I know he's high on you. I know that much.
Well, I mean, how can you not be high on me, man? I'm the Greek God. I'm the total package. But
that's very true.
Again, I'm Mr. Modest. So, but you know, in actuality, you know, I can either confirm or deny any allegations or rumors of whether or not I will be wrestling for CZW in the near future. If you guys really want me to be part of CZW and all you CZW fans who know who I am, want to come to New Jersey, where he's New Jersey, or Philadelphia, or Dayton, or Rhode Island, or wherever else they're going to run, you know, and you guys want to see Papa Don, then just show up at the show and see if I'm there. If I'm not advertised, I might be surprised. If I am advertised, then you know you're getting your money's worth. So either which way, just support the product because CZW is a great company, you know. I mean, a lot of people say, you know, the hardcore stuff. Yeah, and I agree. I'm not a big hardcore fan or hardcore wrestler. I mean, it's for fit for a certain genre. But they do have great, talented wrestlers. I mean, the Beaver Boys, my buddies Alex Reynolds and Johnny Spielberg are the tag team champions. Asriel's in the Federation, you know. Bandito Jr. was in the Federation. I don't know if he's still there. You know, not for nothing, DJ Hyde's a great wrestler. You know, him and I had very good matches at NYWC. And, you know, people and the fans don't need to be so closed-minded and just judge off of what they read or what they hear. You wanna make an opinion about yourself, go to a show, watch it, and let it see if it tickles your fancy. Not the way, you know, Dan over there tickles the fancies at the men at the bathhouses, but that's another story. What I'm saying is, you know, go to ECWA, enjoy the product, see if you like it. Go to NYWC, go to Wrestling Cares, go to Extreme Rising, go to CZW, go to Dragon Gate, go to Ring of Honor, go to WWE. There's many different flavors of ice cream in this lovely world of professional wrestling, and sooner or later you'll like one, you might not like the other, so that's the way it goes.
I can certainly agree with that. Now, another match, a pretty big match for you, I thought, and for the person that you wrestled, was Goldust. You wrestled him
before
he got back into WWE. What was that experience like for you?
That was great. Actually, you know, RWE is another good company. They're actually going to be rerunning, restarting, or not restarting, continue running shows, but I think they're doing it in the Boston area, not as much as in Connecticut anymore, in 2014. But it was a great experience. I mean, obviously, I've been a fan of Goldust for a long time, even when he was the Natural in NWA, WCW days. But, you know, the experience itself and the match itself was really good. He was very pleased with the match, and he put me over, you know, on Twitter afterwards. And I was even shocked he didn't have to. You know, he did it out of the kindness of his heart. He's what, you know, after the match, you know, I shook his hand and, you know, cut a promo, putting him over, telling him how good he is. It wasn't bullshit. It wasn't me kissing ass. The bottom line is it's the truth. He's a class act. If everybody was as generous or as willing to work as Goldust, this business, you know, would be in a lot much better place. This is a guy who's made a ton of money, you know, has been wrestling for every major wrestling promotion, has won titles across the board, you know, he's a household name, basically. And he comes to Connecticut, and he wants to work. I figured it would probably be typical, you know, guy off TV match where you fit in, you know, indie wrestler A and slot B, C, and D and run the same match with, you know, every single indie wrestler. No, he wants it to work. He told me, he's like, listen, Jimmy, he's like, I told you, I saw your stuff, you're good, let's work. You want to call some stuff, you want to call the match, call ahead, call the match. I don't mind. And I was just in awe. No, it's an ultimate respect thing, you know. And, you know, and we went out there, we did our stuff, and he loved the match, I loved the match, the fans loved the match, the promoters loved the match. And, you know, again, match of the night. I mean, you know, a buddy of mine says I should come up with a new T-shirt that says, Austin 316 says I whoop your ass. We'll pop it on 316 says I just stole the show. So who knows? But I don't know. I'm Mr. Modest. I don't know if I'm going to come out with a T-shirt like that.
I've seen you work as a heel, but I've seen a moment where you came out as a face at War Games, ECWA, a little over a year ago. You came out to save the day, and the pop you got from that crowd was one of the loudest I've heard in a long time. Do you like better working as a heel, or do you get something out of working as a babyface?
Well, look, I mean, to me, you give me, you know, an opportunity to pick, I'm always going to pick a heel. Only because how many times can a person go to work, piss people off, and they're paid to do it? You know what I mean? It's almost like... You know, it's almost like, you know, a dream job, you know, to be somebody that you can't be every day, and that's, you know, a real prick, you know? So, bottom line is, I would rather work the heel role, but I do enjoy being a babyface only because I can get to be flashy with my moves. You know, as a heel, I can't really be flashy because then people start to cheer what you're doing. I mean, there is a secret how to get your stuff in, quote-unquote, get your shit in, which is the kiss of death line from anybody who tells you when they're trying to put a match together. But that's another story. You know, there's a way to do things and a way not to do things. And the bottom line is, at the end of the day, it really isn't what you're doing. It's how you do it, and you get the people emotionally invested. And I think I've done that pretty well over there at ECWA, you know? I mean, I sold a ton of T-shirts. And you guys need to either call Mike Tartaglia up and, you know, kiss and make up and start coming back to those shows because you guys are missing a lot.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. Mike... My second question.
How are those new Moon Rising shows? Oh, wait. Never mind.
Hey.
Oh.
You son of a bitch, you. You had to go there, didn't you?
Of course. I'm Mr. Modest.
You had to go there. Look, I had nothing to do. I had nothing to do with losing that building.
Me neither. They never paid me a cent. Anyway.
They did. You lost it on the floor of the bathroom.
Bathroom.
So.
That never happened. What was it like reopening?
Don't think Joe Gacy has that money. Go ahead, Dan.
Shut up, Dean. It's my turn.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I talk too much. Hey, what was it like Shut up, Dean. What was it like reopening the arena in Philly?
It was cool, man. It was. I mean, I've wrestled there before with JAP and with World One, which was Steve Carino's old Fed. You know, so going back was really cool. The match itself, I was looking forward to it because, first of all, you know, I met the guy a couple times in the previous shows. He seemed like a cool dude. And, you know, people don't realize that I know how to wrestle the Lucha Libre style. And I wanted to do an all Lucha match, but, you know, that's not what they wanted. They wanted a technical wrestler, a more scientific guy versus the Lucha style so that they could try to clash and contrast and compare styles to try to put on a good match. And from what I've been told,
and what has been written up, we've done that. And we did that, and we actually did it very well. So it was very exciting wrestling back in the arena, and it was nice. I mean, it's just another building to me. My favorite building is not the arena. My favorite building was the Queens Boulevard Elks Lodge at ECW used to run in. That was my favorite building to wrestle in. But
oh.
Now it's a church.
Oh. My
yep.
final question is this point. You are always working. I was wondering, personally, as much as you work, has there ever been a weekend where you're just like, I'm not going this weekend, or can you afford to do that?
Well, look, the bottom line is this. This is my passion. This is my goal is to go to the WWE, headline WrestleMania, make a ton of money doing this, and become a household name, a superstar, obviously. So if I decide to slack now, which is very important for me not to slack now because I need to get to where I need to get to, it's only going to hinder my process and not, it's going to prolong what the inevitable, and that's me getting there, you know? So if I'm booked on a certain weekend for a certain company in a certain state or a certain country or whatever the case may be, the bottom line is this. I accepted the booking. I'm a professional. I will never no-show. I've never no-showed in my life. There's only been two times that I had to cancel a booking because, you know, a family member had sick, we had a family emergency, and I couldn't make it. But other than that, you book me, I'm there. You book me, you pay me, you're getting your money's worth. Bottom line is I'm going to deliver, and your fans are going to come back, and that's how business is done. So, no, I've never been disgruntled to go wrestling or to go for a certain company. Bottom line is I agreed to it beforehand, so it's premeditated, you know? So I can't really get upset about it. It's an opportunity to shine, make money, and to get my name out there and be seen by the right people, hopefully, which will lead to bigger and better things. It's a constant struggle and a constant fight. So
I was just wondering, with you getting out there more and going to California for the weekend, that sort of thing, is your family still supportive of this?
Yeah. Well, actually... No. Depends which you mean by family. My immediate family? Yes.
Yeah.
You know? Yes. You know? Other people outside? No. But you know what? I don't do it for anybody else but myself. So it doesn't matter who supports me, who doesn't support me. Bottom line is, you know, this is my dream. I've been doing it for 14 years now, man, and it's going to happen. And one day, when I'm on top of the mountain somewhere on a national television program, you know, making buku bucks and everyone's buying Papadon T-shirts and Papadon action figures with the Kung Fu grip. Bottom line is, you know what? It's going to be rewarding because all those people who are negative and want to bring you down, that's my way of saying thank you for being negative and fueling my fire and my passion to do this, because without the hate and the negativity, you know, I could never get better. So, and it, I use it as motivation. So, I mean, that's the bottom line.
Okay. Another thing that I always found very refreshing with you is your merchandising. You seem to come up with a new style of shirt. It's always fresh. And to me, you're one of the few on the independent scene that gets that part of it as well, the fact of merchandising yourself, of putting your name out there. I mean, in the past year, you've had three or four different styles of shirts, that sort of thing. Are there times where you make more money just on merchandise than the actual payday? I mean, it just has to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Listen, man, you have to brand yourself. You have to market yourself. This is a business. You know, bottom line is you go out there, you do what you have to do, you do it well. People are going to enjoy watching you. They're going to buy tickets to come back and watch you again. They're going to buy pay-per-views if you're on it. They're going to buy your merchandise. So it all starts with learning the fundamentals and learning what to do in and out of the ring and how to carry yourself like a professional. Then everything else is like, you know, with the whipped cream on top of the sundae or the cherry on top of the sundae. The reason I come up with good shirts is because I'm a very smart individual who knows what's hip and comes up with good ideas. I'm very artistic, not autistic like Dan, artistic. So the bottom line is I can come up with ideas. I mean, like you said, I had, you know, that Better Talent, Better Wrestling T-shirt, which is available on Pro Wrestling Tees right now. I have my own store on Pro Wrestling Tees, so people who are out of state and they can't come to a show that I'm on, Go to Pro Wrestling Tees and buy your Pop It On t-shirts. They're good quality shirts with great designs, and you don't look like a dork wearing it. You actually look pretty cool, you know.
Then
they came out the typical Greek god with the flag, and then, you know, the other one with the crest, the Greatest Unsigned Talent t-shirt. They came out with the Star Wars logo t-shirt. The new one that I came out with, the Sons of Anarchy logo, you know, with the Alpha Omega and the crystal ball instead of the Anarchy symbol. There's another SOA t-shirt coming out soon with, instead of the American flag draped around it, it's going to be the Greek flag. You know, and then I had the mock-up of the ECW shirt that said Greek effing God. But instead of barbed wire, I put the Greek links in it. In the back, it says Extreme Technician. So, yeah, I mean, listen, you need to make money. This is the wrestling business. It's not the wrestling, you know, let me go and rely on everybody else. If I can't get myself over, who's going to get myself over? Nobody. So I'll get myself over in and out of the ring and through merchandise to make money. I mean, that's the bottom line. I got bills to pay. I got family to feed.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And a lot of guys, I think they missed the boat on that, because people are there. They're going to spend money. And if you have the shirts, they're going to buy your shirts. So maybe it's a better thing for you that they don't get it.
Well, yeah, maybe you guys need to make up with Mike and come back to the shows to buy us some more shirts.
Well, I'll just go to Pro Wrestling Tees. How's that?
All right, fine.
But anyway, Papadon, I did want to talk about a few of the matches that you had in a few different places. One thing that strikes me is the Percy Pringle III Memorial Cup. You made your way out to California again for that. What was that all about? I wasn't familiar with this until I actually saw it on your listings of matches.
It was a tournament, six-man tag tournament, which led to I believe it was a battle royal of all the winners at the end, and the winner of the battle royal went to Percy Pringle Cup in honor of Percy Pringle. It was a great time, great experience. Dave Marquez runs one hell of a great company out there. I've known Dave for a long time. It was just the right place at the right time. I mean, I was out there already for Wrestling Cares. There's a show on Sunday. And just piggybacked on it, had an opportunity to work another show, sold some more T-shirts, and, you know, met some new people, and, you know, had a good time.
And the other one that jumped at me was the Shane Shamrock Memorial Cup you were a part of this year. How was that for this was your first Shane Shamrock Cup?
Yes, my first Shane Shamrock Cup. Made it to the finals with to the final match, and Luke Hawks won it. It was very very rewarding. I had a very good time. Crowd was awesome. The company's awesome. My hat's off to Dan McDevitt and the rest of the MCW crew, Sean Cradle and everybody, because they know how to put on a good show.
All right. Oh, now, the last question I have is some new people that did show up in NYWC, specifically David Starr. Now, he's been getting a lot of press lately. Have you had a chance to actually lock up with David Starr?
Yeah, I actually had a three-way match a few months back. It was the first time we ever wrestled, because him and I, we know each other, we're friends. It was me, him, and Grim Reefer, three-way dance. So it was a good match.
Okay, yeah. And what about Chrissy Rivera? She's kind of a spark plug. What do you think of her?
From what I hear, she's a little tough chick. So, in the literal sense. And, you know, bottom line is, she gets mad because I call her the Jose Luis Rivera on Christmas morning, and she'll get the joke. My buddy J-Ro knows what's up. He's the champ, and she's a jobber. But that's inside joke. And then other than that, I mean, yeah, man. I mean, more faces are showing up at NYWC because NYWC is putting on one hell of a product, you know. And people go home, they're happy. They get to see wrestling. They get to interact with the wrestlers and buy merch and. They get entertained, you know. It's not like you're watching it on TV where you just can flip through the channel, you get bored, you change it. No, these people at the edge of their seats, you know, they want to be part of the show. They're cheering, they're booing, they're yelling, they're heckling, you know. So it's a good time.
That's a good place. I was up there for a WSU show before.
Hold
before
on a second.
Sold.
You drive all the way up there for WSU, you creeper, you, and you don't come to NYWC. What's wrong with you?
I went with Brady. That should explain a lot of things.
You know what? I don't want to hear it. I want to see you guys February 15th at the New York NYWC.
I
want
to go. I do want to go to the Psycho Circus. Is that your next booking, the Psycho Circus?
No, my next booking would be February 8th, which is Extreme Rising in Pittsburgh.
Okay, so we got Extreme Rising on the 8th, and then Psycho Circus the following weekend. Psycho Circus is going to be huge. It's going to be huge, right?
Yeah, the Psycho Circus is the most sadistic match in NYWC history. They have it once a year. Tables, ladders, barbed wires, war game style, where every minute someone comes to the ring, or every 30 seconds or 2 minutes, whatever the time interval is. And then after that, eliminations occur. All the belts are on the line. It's really hectic, man. It's really a sight to see. You're gonna leave in awe. I tell you that, you know, being very modest. But I'm in the match called the Master of the Mat match. I was told yesterday, which is going to be me versus Drew Gulak versus Alex Reynolds versus Johnny Silver. It's a 20-minute. I believe this year they made it 20 minutes instead of 30 minutes. Time limit match, based on point system. You get 2 points for a submission, 1 point for a pin. You get -2 for a DQ, -1 for a countout. The person with the most points at the end of the match, at the end of the time, becomes the master of the mat. I've won it twice, and Anthony Nice won it a third time. This is the fourth match they've ever had of this of this magnitude. Yep.
Wow. That sounds exciting. Just on the strength of that match alone, you have the CZW World Tag Team Champions. You have Papa Don and the CZW World Heavyweight Champion. My goodness, that's enough to sell me on Psycho
Good,
Circus.
Then I better see you guys there. You and the rest of the Fat Pack, come down to New York or come up to New York and have a good time.
I'm going to try to find a way to get there. I'm telling you that much.
I don't want to hear try. I don't want to hear try.
Do
I
or do
hear
not.
Must. Yes, but there is no try. Thank you, my fellow geek friend.
Exactly. But Papa Don, where can the fine people follow you if they want to keep up with your career and follow the Greek god? Mr. Modesty.
Well, Mr. Modesty, Captain Modest. Well, this is what you're going to do. One, you either go on the Twitter, and it's Greek God Papa Don on the Twitter. You go on the Facebook, Greek God Papa Don. Again, I keep it simple for the masses. You know, not all of them are very intellectually sound. I mean, your co-host being one of them. But go on Pro Wrestling Tees as well. You can get the Papa Don T-shirt. You should be putting all the pictures up there now. I mean, I know one of them is up already, the old Better Talent, Better Wrestling T-shirt that I used to have. So, you know, support local indie wrestling. Again, I'm going to be all over the place. The 22nd of February, I'll be in Ohio for Burning River Championship Wrestling. I'm going to be at Ludus, the SAT Fighting Spirit Wrestling promotion, the 21st of February. I may have something the last weekend, I think, in February. If there was the last weekend, I'm not sure. I got to check, man. I'm all over the place, which is good. I'm not complaining. You know, I want more bookings. The more bookings, the better. You know?
That's right. Don't forget the return of New Moon Rising Wrestling. You're going to be on that show.
Oh, yeah, right. You guys can't afford me last time. That's what you guys told me. Give me that excuse. I'm sorry, Dan looked at the bunny. Dan Lord went to the... Went to the buffet, spent all the budget on the buffet. We can't afford to bring you in.
That's what happened.
But listen,
believe me, I tried.
Listen.
We're not going to get into it on the air, but we were trying. I'll put it that way.
It's all right, man. Listen, there's a saying. There's a saying in life. If you do something good, you don't do it for free. And this is a business. So if you guys can't afford me, no big deal. There's no hard feelings. It's just the way it is. You guys could afford me. Then we do business, and I do what I do best, and that's bring people to the show and entertain them, and then bring them back the following month so they can see it all over again. But
frankly, what I pitched, and I'll tell you right now, was you come in for a one-off and just decimate our entire roster, and then you leave. Yeah. We never see you. That's what I pitched.
That's bad booking, bro. Come on, seriously.
It's bad booking, but it's good for you, pal.
Yeah, whatever. If you think so. But look, bottom line is this: April 5th is the Super 8. We'll go support the Super 8 on April 5th, Newark, Delaware, ECWA, the oldest tournament that there is, on the 12th, right? 7 days after the 5th is the 12th. Yes, the following week is CZW Best of the Best. Hint. So,
no way.
Let's go out and watch that. Hey, maybe. I didn't say anything. So,
son of a gun.
I'm telling you, Dean, he's just saying.
I know. He's,
you know, and in August, I believe, is the next, you know, Shane Shamrock Cup. So go support that tournament. That's a great cause. Go support, you know, Maryland Championship Wrestling month in, month out, ECWA, CZW, NYWC, Extreme Rising especially. They're making waves. So just go support good independent wrestling companies like Dragon Gate and like Evolve and in Ring of Honor, which really isn't an independent now because you guys don't have a contract to wrestle for those two top companies. But whatever. Just go support professional wrestling. Support, you know, your unsigned talents and the greatest unsigned talent today, the Extreme Technician, the Greek God, and come out and buy a picture, buy a T-shirt. I'll shake your hand. I'll sign it. You know, I'll even sign it nice. I won't put avoid the clap, you know, like Jimmy Dugan. But that's another story.
That's another story. Papa Don, thank you so much. You were pretty gentle with us this evening.
Well, you know, a new year, being more modest, being more humble, you know. So, listen, we'll have more fun next time. Just don't make it another year before you bring it back on. You know what I'm saying, Slappy?
It certainly won't be, sir. But you have a great night.
I will see you guys. I will see you guys at Psycho Circus. If I don't see you guys at Psycho Circus, I'm going to come over there to your neck of the woods, and I'm going to smack the hell out of both of you guys.
At the return of New Moon Rising Wrestling.
I'll
talk to you later. I'll talk to you later, Papa Don.
Later, brother. Be good.
Bow to the Greek God!
Greek God Papa Don. It has been far too long. Promotions have come and gone in that time, Dan. But he is Mr. Modesty.
I got nothing.
Well, on that note, Dan, sit back, relax. It's time for USC. This was pre-recorded yesterday with Omega Squad and I. Dan, are you ready?
I'm ready.
It's time!
This past Saturday on January 25th, 2014, UFC Fight Night. It was headlined by a lightweight fight between Benson Henderson and Josh Thompson. Not too impressive, Omega.
No, I don't think it was terribly impressive. I think, Henderson has been criticized before about being a non-finisher. He continues that streak again with not finishing Josh Thompson. I don't know whether it's that he fights a smart fight or that he fights he just doesn't have that kind of finishing power. It's unusual. And it's not doing him any favors as far as his career or having him be a guy that people want to watch. The excitement level, when you think of Benson Henderson, you don't think of him having exciting fights. You think of Anthony Pettis doing the Showtime kick off the cage against Benson Henderson. So, I mean, despite that, he is athletic, he is skilled, he's crafty, he's very strong. Ability to get off the cage, get up off the ground, and keep the fight going. It served him well in keeping the wins going, but it's not doing him any favors from a popularity standpoint.
Certainly his boss was none too pleased either. He expressed that this was what you would see out of Ben. Like you were saying, this is a Benson Henderson fight. Now, for those at home, it was a split decision, 48-47, 49-46, and then one judge saw it 48-47 to Thompson. Now, do you see it very controversial? I think the most controversial thing is that one judge saw it 49-46 for Benson Henderson. Why this wide range of scores from the judges? Why do you think that happened?
Well, quite frankly, it was a close fight. When you get right down to it, you know, other than the first round, which I thought was clearly Thompson's, you can make arguments in any of those rest of those four rounds for either guy, I think. I think that Henderson had a stronger case in probably round two and maybe round five. But, I mean, if you said that Thompson won three rounds out of those, I say fine. I'm completely fine with that. I don't think it was a clear-cut decision one way or another. I think what really happened was Thompson, when he broke his hand in that first round, just wasn't able to establish the kind of offense he was delivering in the first round, and just wasn't able to be as effective against Benson Henderson, who you know, unless you're operating 100%, he's going to get away from me. He's going to land some more strikes, some more punches. He can land those leg kicks. It wasn't controversial in my view. I mean, you can argue, it's certainly arguable who won what rounds and who won the fight, but in the end, it was a close fight, and if you don't want to lose, don't send it to the judges.
That's always been the mantra, shall we say. Now, do we open up another discussion on judging in UFC, or is that just so passe at this point?
What else are you going to do? I mean, I think there's certainly an argument that we have more educated judges, but this isn't the fight to say that this isn't the fight you hold up and say judging is horrible. I mean, this was just a close fight. I mean, I think it could have gone either way. You know, judging as a whole, I think we could benefit from less from MMA judges who are actually judging MMA specifically, not necessarily boxing judges who have made the transition or who part-time MMA. That's always been a case, but it's going to be up to the athletic commissions. They hire the judges, and you know, until they see the necessity to better train their judges and maybe make them specific to MMA, I don't see it changing anytime soon.
I have to agree with that. Now, moving on to the co-main event, we had Miocic defeating Gabriel Gonzaga. That went to a decision as well, and it was a unanimous decision, 30-27 twice and 29-28, and really not a very good showing for Gonzaga.
No, it was surprisingly, you know, I think when we talked about this last week, we said, I don't see this going three rounds, so it surprises me that we actually got this far. But what did occur that we did talk about last week was the fact that once Gonzaga got out of the first round, he appeared to tire. His cardio has always been suspect in his last previous two fights where he knocked out guys in less than a minute, didn't show us anything that would change that opinion. And indeed, that's pretty much what happened here. Miocic was the faster fighter, was the more well-rounded fighter, fought a smart fight, kept Gonzaga at bay, didn't let him get a hold of him, didn't let him drag him to the ground where Gonzaga could use his Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt against him, and didn't allow Gonzaga to land big shots on him. So, I mean, if you wanted to beat Gabriel Gonzaga, I think Miocic did what he needed to do. He fought a smart fight. But unfortunately, it just wasn't terribly exciting. Gonzaga, you know, I think his days of sniffing the top 10 are over at this point. Because, you know, once you get someone who isn't just going to hit the canvas after one shot, they can just outwear him.
And that's exactly what happened in this one, too.
Exactly. I mean, just wear him down, keep him a distance, let him run around, or push the pace, which is another thing Miocic did, was push the pace a little bit, and Gonzaga just couldn't keep up. That's the key to defeating Gonzaga. Unless Gonzaga can find a way to get cardio up, and at this point in his career, I don't really see it. I think he's going to be a perennial, you know, top. If he's top 20, I think he's feeling good about himself.
Do you think that Miocic, this was a good showing from Miocic? Not particularly in my mind.
No, I mean it wasn't terribly exciting. It wasn't horrible. There's nothing that from that I would take away and say, he's
a contender. Yeah,
yeah, but there's nothing that says he jumps three guys to get a title shot either.
Oh, exactly.
You know, so, I mean, you sit up there and you say, okay, well, where is he now? He's ranked number 7. You say, okay, well, Bigfoot maybe. Josh Barnett maybe.
Josh Barnett would probably be a good fight.
You know,
Barnett coming off a loss, of course.
Or the winner of Overeem Mir, you know, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of middle of the road heavyweight fights he could get. I mean, he needs to show and pick up a big win in order for me to have him in discussion for Cain Velasquez.
How about Gonzaga? Do you think Roy Nelson? That's what everybody seems to be pointing in the direction.
Sure, why not? the only problem is that could get two guys that could gas in the second round.
Oof.
So
you could certainly have that, because in all of Roy Nelson's fight, there has been somebody pushing the pace. You had Junior Dos Santos pushing the pace. You had Verdum pushing the pace in the last fight. It escapes my mind who he fought, but they were pushing the pace. They were the ones who were the trend. Oh, Cormier.
Yeah.
So you had all these guys that were pushing the pace, the ones who were being active. If that's not happening, you're going to have a terribly boring fight.
Right, exactly.
If it goes past a round, because both these guys could knock the other one out.
Yeah, I mean, both those guys have knockout power, but Nelson's pretty durable, so I don't really see Gonzaga knocking Nelson out, per se. I can see Nelson knocking out Gonzaga. We've seen Gonzaga get knocked out.
Yeah.
But it could very well just be a matter of... they're both presumed jiu-jitsu black belts, so even if they go to the ground, they might nullify each other in that area, so it's probably going to be a striking war. And then if it gets beyond one round, then who knows at that point.
Of course, that's pure speculation at this point. Nothing's been talked about seriously. Now, another thing about Roy Nelson, he's actually going for Ken Kaiser's old role, or so he says.
Yeah, I don't know about that, so...
Now, of course, Ken Kaiser, for the people that don't know, he is the head of the Nevada State Athletic Commission that just recently stepped down, and Roy Nelson has said that USC would be very happy with him being on the commission.
And then Dana White said he was an effing moron. So.
That I can...
take your pick. You know.
Shut your face. Now... moving right along, Donald Cerrone, I'm sure you're very happy. He defeated a mechanic that they pulled out of the crowd. we're not going to see Martins again too soon. It was a knockout, a beautiful knockout. Separated his head right from his shoulders. Head kick, 440 in the first round.
Yeah, I don't... Martins was outclassed by... a vast margin. There was really no question about this. Cerrone had his typical slow start, but once he got the rhythm, once he got warmed up, it was academic. It ended up being a single right kick to the neck that put Martins down for the count, and he was out before he hit the mat. Really good performance for Cerrone. Gets the highlight reel KO. Martins, you know, he'll get another shot at the UFC. You don't take a guy who's top 10 ranked and lose once and then not get another shot. But he didn't look good doing so, so I wouldn't expect him to be on anything but the prelims in his next fight.
Yeah.
Possibly only on Fight Pass.
Donald Cerrone, where does he go from here? Who do you see him fighting next?
Well, I mean, he's got a lot of possibilities. At lightweight, I mean, you know, Khabib Nurmagomedov. I can never say his name.
Nobody wants to fight him, though.
I don't know why.
They can't say his name. They can't fight him either.
They can't say his name. They just don't want to get suplexed. I mean, I don't think Cerrone would be intimidated by Nurmagomedov. I think that's a good fight for Cerrone. You know, it's the rest of the card. I mean, he's got to rack up some more wins to really. Go up the top 10 here. So, I mean, I think you really got to give him a step up in competition, certainly against Martins, who was not anybody. Give him someone like Nurmagomedov, I think.
Or Diaz, the guy who doesn't want to fight him.
Yeah, I mean, this is ridiculous that the fighter's not saying, I don't want to fight this guy. You fight whoever he gets put in front of you. I mean, this isn't a democracy. I mean,
it's the Diaz brother, though.
Yeah, well, Diaz brothers.
Yeah, so what can you say? Did you happen to see Nate Diaz did put out an interesting Facebook post?
I did not
about the main event. Yeah, well,
was that the Germanic reading I saw from Tommy Tilhold this morning?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, I did see that then. Yes.
Yes. So he was none too pleased with the main event of what we're talking about here. But anyway, moving right along, featherweight bout, we had Jeremy Stephens defeating Elkins. I thought Stephens looked pretty darn good.
I think he did too. I think Elkins, this fight went pretty much the way I kind of thought it was. Stephens would be the guy who would push the pace, would land a lot of strikes, would try to knock Elkins out, and Elkins would be really tough and not be knocked out. And that was pretty much how it went. I just don't think Elkins just couldn't seem to land anything. Stephens basically kept him at bay, landed the shots he wanted to land, and Elkins just kind of swung stuff and tried to land stuff. He got, you know, a late guillotine attempt, but didn't get enough time to finish it. It really wasn't a close fight, in my view. I think Elkins was outclassed. I think Stephens really controlled the fight, controlled the pace, and landed when he needed to. So Stephens looked really good, and certainly him cracking the top 10 after that fight is certainly proof enough of that he did very well.
Where is he ranked now?
Number 10.
Oh, okay. Good. And, of course, he won by unanimous decision, 30-27 twice and 29-28. Now, moving on to the preliminaries, the Sergio Pettis train was derailed.
Yes, it was. The interesting thing was I think Pettis was winning that fight up until...
he was. I think most observers would say that Pettis had the first two rounds.
And you can argue that Caceres maybe took the second. But I think Pettis was winning round three up until the point where Caceres got Pettis down and grabbed that submission. Caceres is, I talked about him last night. I'm just not sure where to put Caceres. He's got that wild style. Just don't know what he's going to throw. You think when he's crafty, he's unusual, doesn't throw what you think he's going to throw, normal people would throw, and that works for some people, the inexperienced people like Sergio Pettis, but when you get up and step up to a veteran, someone who's got experience, someone who trains very well, who's got a lot of skill, that doesn't hold up because he's got openings and stuff like that that Sergio Pettis was not able to take advantage of. I think the story of this fight was how much bigger Caceres was than Pettis. Caceres, even being a tall fighter for that weight class, just towered over Pettis. I think Pettis would be better served to go to 125, assuming he can make that cut. And it's a thinner division, so I think he's got more time to rack up wins and really grow before he gets up to, if he does continue to win, get a title shot. But he definitely needs more seasoning. Whatever 10 fights he's had to this point just didn't prepare him for the USC caliber talent.
And of course, Eddie Wineland back in the winning circle, winning by TKO in the second round, 4:16 left.
Yeah, this was actually a pretty entertaining fight. I thought Jabouin probably won that first round, landed more kicks, but it was pretty close. It was some back and forth striking, so it was kind of what we expected out of two strikers and these guys. Eventually, in round two, though, Wineland takes control. Lands a right hand, puts Jabouin on his back and grabs, tries to go for a submission, ends up eventually mounting Jabouin and ground and pound to the TKO finish. Very impressive for Wineland. That's exactly what I would expect out of someone as highly ranked as him, and he continues to make his case for another title shot at USC Gold.
I certainly agree. Now, of course, anything else on this preliminaries that you wanted to discuss?
No, not really. I think Darren Cruikshank looked really good with
The wheel kick, yes.
The wheel kick, yeah, that was pretty good. It's just one of those kicks that you just don't see very often, and it was brutal. It was impressive. It was great. I don't think Mike Rio is any great shakes, but I think that, you know, Darren Krivchik looked good. He's had some struggles, but I think, you know, now he can continue to move up, give him some more talent. We'll see how he does in the future. You know, he's still a preliminary level talent to this point.
What about Nikita Krylov with his 25-second knockout?
I have actually not seen this kick, but anybody who can knock out anybody in 25 seconds deserves another look and deserves a space on a televised card.
Certainly, so. Perhaps a Fight Pass. You never...
Yeah, well, he was on Fight Pass, so
yeah, he was.
Put him on FX1. That's all I'm gonna say.
Now the bonus awards were Fight of the Night was Caceres and Pettis, Knockout of the Night was Cerrone, and Submission was Caceres, taking home $100,000.
$100,000 for a night's work.
That's Benoit money, as we like
it
to
is,
say.
That's right.
he took home some Benoit money. Now, of course, UFC 169, they're back on pay-per-view. They're going to give you two title fights this Saturday, as long as there's not a horrible snowstorm in New Jersey, and they have to move it, because that's all the talk now. Contingency plans for the Super Bowl. Now, of course, this takes place at the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey.
Yeah, so The weather reports that I've seen today on ESPN and says that we should be fine and this should happen on Saturday. So,
you never know, though. New Jersey?
It is New Jersey.
Strange weather. Strange weather, especially North Jersey for some reason. It gets stranger weather than us here in the south by Philly. Now, as I said, it takes place at the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey. Two title fights at the top of the card. You have Barro, who is now your undisputed bantamweight champion, taking on Uriah Faber. He's been to the dance before. He just hasn't been able to crack the gold, I guess you could say, and actually follow through and win a title in UFC. What do you think? Faber probably should have been the 2013 Fighter of the Year, simply on the caliber of talent and the amount of fights. What do you have to say about this fight? Do you think Faber can actually do it, or is Barro just a phenomenon that nobody can touch right now?
Well, you know, coming off that 2013, you got to think Uriah Faber has as good a shot as anybody right now. Certainly has all the momentum in the world. Has looked fantastic in his last four fights, and is just, you know, racking up wins. You know, he beat Michael McDonald, beat Yuri Alcantara, Scott Jorgensen, and look good doing it all. You know, it's hard to deny him. I've said it before about Uriah Faber. Despite his losses in title fights, he doesn't lose against people who don't become champion. And you know, he's just that good. I mean, he's 34 years old. I mean, he's a veteran. He's got 36 fights. You know, you can't surprise him. You can't. He knows all the talent. He's got great wrestling. He's got great submissions, and he's got better, drastically improved striking under Dwayne Bang Ludwig now. So he's got a much different package now than he did against his last fight against Hendon Burrell, where he did end up losing by decision. You know, and taking Hendon Burrell to decision is a victory in itself. You know, the question is, did he get injured, that kind of stuff. You know, he seems to get injured, break his hands, and then can't fight as well as he hopes for. Hendon Burrell is that type of skilled fighter that you really need to be 100% to try to beat. And this is a quick turnaround for Faber. With Dominic Cruz going out with a groin injury again, it becomes a very short fight. Now, it's not. It's six weeks, but it's short, but it's not. It's not insurmountably short, and certainly Uriah Faber is in tremendous shape. So I don't expect it to be too bad, but you know, he just doesn't seem to get things to go his way when he gets UFC title shots. You know, despite that, I think Hendon Burrell is an unworldly talent. Shades of a smaller Anderson Silva, a flashier Anderson Silva, if that's even possible. He's looked dominant in all his fights, including his fight against Faber, and certainly his win over Eddie Wineland in his last outing in September proves that. So, you know, Teak's spinning back kick was great, and the punches,
oh, yeah.
You know, tremendous, tremendous fighter. It's going to be very close. It's going to be – it's not a toss-up. I'm picking Barao based on his skills, based on his speed, based on his elusiveness. But I do not discount Faber in this fight. I think if anyone has a shot of putting Barao down and grabbing a submission and keeping Barao down on the ground long enough to outpoint him,
mm-hmm.
I think it's Uriah Faber. That being said, I'm going to pick Hendon Barao by decision again over Uriah Faber.
I'm agreeing right with you, pretty much for the same reasons. It's going to be a good fight, though, and hopefully one that's not marred by any type of judging decision, because this could be a fight where you could have some things going on the ground. You could have one in control of the other, but a judge might not see it that way. So hopefully this isn't one that they talk about afterwards. Now, another one that I don't see going to decision, this one's for the featherweight title. Jose Aldo, who is always in the best pound-for-pound discussions, taking on Ricardo Lamas. Now, Lamas, I don't know much about.
He's a strong fighter, a guy who likes to ground and pound pick up his victories that way. He's got a submission victory against Cub Swanson, who is, I think, ranked three or four at featherweight. So he's fought the talent level that you would need to fight to earn this title shot. That being said, Jose Aldo is another one of these otherworldly talents who just... You know, it just seems better than their fighters. The only fight that I can see there where he didn't truly outclass his opponent was Frankie Edgar. And that was a very close fight. That did go to decision. But and Edgar is a great fighter, so there's no question about his level of ability. Lamas, he has the wrestling background. He could ground and pound Jose Aldo. It's a question of whether he's going to get that opportunity. If Jose Aldo isn't going to kick his legs into pulp, if Jose Aldo isn't going to keep him on the outside and just jab him to death and maybe, you know, try to pick up a striking thing. You know, I can see in this case Aldo kind of coasting on his elusivity, his speed, and just kind of keeping Lamas out to the outside, punching him with the jabs and leg kicks, and just not allowing Lamas to get the takedown that he would need to pound out Jose Aldo. It doesn't really seem like to me from the fights I've seen of Lamas that he's got the skills to beat Aldo. I just don't see it. I think this could be a quick night for Lamas. I'm going to pick Jose Aldo by TKO in the first.
I agree, except I'm going with the second. I think he's going to give Lamas a little hope.
That could be. I mean, it's the only one only person he's really knocked out quickly, and even that was almost to the end of the round, was Chad Mendez in early 2012. And that was at 4:59 of the first round.
Was that crazy, the crazy fight that took place in Brazil when he went out and he was with the fans and everything?
Yeah, that was it, yeah.
That was an amazing, just the atmosphere. You don't see that in sports too often, but Brazil is just crazy.
Brazil's like Canada with wrestling.
Yeah. Very, very good point. Now, two guys that have seen better days, both champions, not necessarily in UFC. Frank Mir, of course, was a former two-time UFC heavyweight champion. Alistair Overeem has seen gold in other promotions, including Strikeforce, pre-Zuffa Strikeforce, I should say. But two guys that really are at a crossroads in their career. Frank Mir has lost his last three, if I'm not mistaken. Alistair Overeem has lost his last two against two guys he really should have bulldozed through.
He should have at least beat Bigfoot.
That's what I'm saying. Even Travis Brown, you can make the Overeem of even 2009, 2010 would have steamrolled.
Well,
Travis Brown.
You could argue that he had Travis Brown beat. All he had to do was finish him.
True.
And he let Travis Brown get away. So
that is true.
But that's over, Ray, in a way. Now, these guys, like I was saying, Mir looked terrible against Barnett. You could call it an early stoppage, whatever. The guy was flat on his face. That's why the fight was stopped. He dropped like a sack of potatoes. But Mir really, I don't even know why he's around anymore. And I'm not saying, I respect Frank Mir. I like Frank Mir. I'm a fan of Frank Mir. I just don't know why he's not going to get back into that. His last shot was against Junior Dos Santos, and I think that's pretty much it. I just don't see the guy getting back to championship. I don't know why. If you're not there for a title, why are you still around?
I think the explanation for why Frank Mir is still in the UFC is he is on 3 losses, and he is still ranked number 10 in heavyweight.
Good gracious.
So, quite frankly, it's a thin division. We've talked about it before. Once you get below Cain Velasquez and Junior Dos Santos, it's kind of a wasteland right now. The top 10 includes a guy who's going to fight at 205 in 2 weeks. Junior Dos Santos lost to Cain Velasquez twice. Josh Barnett just lost. Bigfoot Silva lost to Cain Velasquez twice. There just isn't that many guys left in at heavyweight right now. Everybody just seems to either go up against Cain and lose, or they knock each other out.
Yeah. You know?
So it's just one of those divisions. It's not a competitive division like lightweight or welterweight right now. It's very much Cain Velasquez and everybody else. So, but getting back to the actual fight here, Mirren versus Overeem, it is pretty much. It's hard for me to say because of the thin division that it's a loser leaves town match. These are both guys who have recognizable names that can at least at worst headline a prelim card. It's not that bad. Granted, Overeem's expensive. Mir's probably pretty expensive too.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't surprise me if the loser leaves because of their price tag.
Or maybe they'll have sense like Dan Henderson and, you know, sign a lesser deal to stick around.
It's possible, but, you know, it comes down to if Mears loses, he's lost 4 in a row. He's lost to top 10 fighters, just doesn't have it anymore. And that's fine. You can't be a champion forever. But to your point, you know, and if you're not in it for a title, why are you in it? You really don't like to see guys fight just for money, per se. I don't think Mir is that guy. Personally, I like to see Mir back in the booth commentating. I really liked him in WEC when he was doing the color.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that. Yeah, he was really good.
I really thought he was good. I think he's got some political deals with some political
aspirations.
No, not political aspirations. Problems with the UFC.
Oh.
I think there's some kind of. Mir likes to speak his mind. Let's put it that way. So
that's why him and Brock were oil and vinegar.
Yeah. So, I really have a hard time picking this fight because Overeem has so underwhelmed lately, and so has Frank. Frank has improved boxing. We know that from his previous fights, but Overeem's going to be a much better striker than Frank is. Frank's going to have to try to get Overeem down and try to submit him. And Overeem really isn't a slouch on the ground either. He's got decent skills when he wants to show them on the ground. But if I'm picking this one, knowing Frank Mir's recent history, I'm going to have to take Overeem in this one. I think Overeem's going to come in and he's going to land those heavy kickboxing strikes and eventually put Mir down and pound him out by TKO. And I'm going to do say in the second.
Hey, I think we agree again. This is a first.
Hey, there we go.
Actually, last week we were pretty on. I think I went for Gonzaga, though, strangely enough.
Yeah, that was the only one we were different on.
Yeah, but this one I agree with you on again. I think, I don't know, Frank Mir, I like the guy, but I just don't, I don't see it going his way. But then again, Overeem hasn't looked terribly impressive since Brock, and Brock was really, his head wasn't in that fight. He knew he was, if he was losing, he was leaving, and I think he was looking forward to leaving anyway. So
yeah, yeah.
Anything else you want to talk about on this card? The last two fights, somewhat interesting, but...
Yeah, I mean, John Lineker can't seem to make weight, so God even knows if he's going to make weight for this fight. In any case, I'm going to pick Bogatina. From what I've seen of Bogatina, he looks really good, really has some well-rounded skills, and should continue up the rankings. I'm interested to see Jamie Varner versus Abel Trujillo. I think Varner certainly... despite losing to a split decision to Gleison Tibau, has looked good recently. I'd like to see him continue to move up, but he's facing Abel Trujillo, who is a really strong guy who can really pound guys out. So that's going to be an interesting fight to see. Either of those are kind of a pick 'em in my view. I think, but this Varner Trujillo fight is a pick 'em. I think I'm going to pick Varner just because, and that's more of a emotional pick than it is necessarily a analysis pick.
All right. So this is coming up on Saturday, of course, on pay-per-view from Newark, New Jersey. 10:00 is the start time on pay-per-view, and that's UFC 169. One last thing we do want to talk about is Pat Barry announced his retirement. Now, Pat Barry, I don't know what to say. What do you say about a heavyweight with the career, the up-and-down roller coaster career that Pat Barry had?
It was not boring.
True.
I think what you can say with Pat Barry is most of the time when you saw Pat Barry on the card, someone was getting knocked out. It might have been Pat Barry, but someone was getting knocked out.
Very true.
I mean, granted, he's lost via submission a couple times there. But, you know, if you look down his record and he's got highlight reel KOs. He's got people that have turned him into highlight reel KOs. He fought Krokop, lost to Krokop, fought Chet Congo, lost to him, lost to Stefan Struve via submission. He beat LeVar Johnson and lost to the late Shane and knocked out the late Shane Del Rosario a couple years ago. But, I mean, his record is 8-7 as a professional mixed martial artist. Just really couldn't deal with people who could wrestle him. Doesn't like wrestling is what he said today, and he just wants to hit people. So if you really just want to hit people, that's fine. The rumor is he goes back to kickboxing, and I think that's fine. I mean, not everybody wants to be a mixed martial artist, and other than it's popular right now, I don't think it's any great loss to the mixed martial arts community, other than perhaps some highlight reel KOs. But good for him to make the decision. I think it's probably a smart decision, rather than try to draw it out and get cut eventually. So.
Yeah, he was probably close to that anyway, because he really he's not a draw per se, and I said, a very up and down career.
Yeah, mostly down. I mean, he won his first three professional fights. If you think about his first three fights, were not in the UFC, so his UFC record is
5-7.
5-7. So,
yeah, very. Once he got to the big boys, and he always had trouble with. Names, so to say. So, well, goodbye, Pat Barry.
Yep.
Best of luck.
Best of luck.
In your future endeavors. Back to kickboxing, where you don't have to worry about that pesky ground game.
Exactly.
Again, UFC 169 is this Saturday. Make sure you check that out. We'll talk about that next week. Go UFC 169 coming up this Saturday, and the MMA world mourns the loss of Pat Barry's MMA career.
Sounds like it.
Whew. Boy, Dan, I'll tell you, Pat Barry.
Interesting.
Yes. No, Pat Barry's interesting. You could say that. 5-7, leaving the UFC after 12 fights in the octagon.
Well, sometimes 12 is just enough.
Yeah, 12 times
Why go 13 if I'm not that great?
It's not that he wasn't that. He could strike with the best of them. He got very confused, though, when somebody would wrestle him.
That would be a problem.
Well, you know, it's mixed martial arts. It's not kickboxing. He came from kickboxing, and now he's going back. So,
well,
good for Pat Barry.
As long as he's happy.
He's moving on. Now, I have received word that calling in a few minutes will be Rory Mondo.
Cool.
Now, let's talk about Rory Mondo for a minute. Of course, the young man had quite a career in a very condensed form, much like Sick Nick Mondo, of course, his hero, his inspiration, the reason he started this whole thing. What do you have to say about the career of Rory Mondo, what you've seen of it?
It was almost as if, not that he had a wish to go out the same way, but, well, that he wanted to in every way emulate his mentor, Sick Nick Mondo, even to the point where he would put his life literally on the line sometimes. And I mentioned it in passing earlier, the both of them, that Rory Mondo and Sick Nick, the mileage that they have on their body mentally and physically in the 4 or 5 years they wrestled doubles any mileage I've had in the 30 years of my life, almost to the T. I mean, the things he's done, you couldn't pay me to do that off the top of a cane.
Oh, you're talking about the scaffold spot with Lucky 13?
Oh, God, yeah. What a way to end it.
Yeah, the last bump he took was one that I would never visualize.
No, well, considering what he was originally going to do.
Yeah, Weave Whacker Dan, you know, these things.
You know,
I want to get into his mind, because it's not like he... A lot of these, I don't know, people write off the deathmatch artists, the deathmatch wrestlers,
and that drives
me
crazy.
And they're not dumb people. They know exactly what they're doing. It's just something that they do. Maybe we can get to the bottom of it with Rory. Maybe today will be the day that we find out what goes through the mind of a deathmatch wrestler, Dan.
I still, you know, I've known Matt. We've known Matt how long now? I still have no idea.
How long we've known him, or...
No,
why he
does what he does.
I was being coy, Dan.
Oh, you're so funny.
I was being coy.
Oh, Dean, you're awesome.
You know.
I'm being coy now, too.
Coy?
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
I'm glad you used it now.
I could be wrong.
I'm glad you used it not when originally you were going to use it.
There wasn't the opportunity, Dan.
No. He doesn't give much opportunity as an opening.
There wasn't much opportunity. But what I'm going to do, Dan, I'm gonna play the mystery man as we wait for Rory Mondo to make his appearance. I know what's going to happen, though, Dan. We're going to start playing the song.
He's going to call right in.
So gear up with the mystery man, Dan. And we'll be back right after this.
You.
was Gear Up, Dan, by the Mystery Men. Of course, you can go to lucha-rock.com, pick that up for yourself for
$9. $9. What did you say the name of that album was?
Musica en Mascarada.
Yeah, Musica en la Mascarada. I'll have to remember that for Obey the Puck.
Music in masks, Dan. Think about it. It makes a hell of a lot of sense.
It makes total sense. It makes sense.
Spanish.
What?
It's the Queen's Spanish, Dan.
La Español?
Rory is out enjoying himself right now, Dan.
He's allowed.
He is. He's retired.
Yeah, really. I wish I was.
He took a trip to Israel. He had a good time.
I wish I was 23.
Oh, here we are.
Hey, timing is a beauty.
Timing is wonderful thing.
I wish I was 23 and said, you know, I'm retired.
Well, he's moving on to another phase of his life, but we're going to get right to that right after this, Dan.
Cut my life into pieces. This is my last resort. Suffocation, no breathing. Don't give a fuck if I cut my arm bleeding.
Recently retiring at Cage of Death 15, we are now joined by Rory Mondo. Rory, how are you doing here tonight?
Dean, what's going on, man? You could not catch me at a better time than right now. I just witnessed the 6 year in a row Northeast Vikings, the team that I've been with for over 9 years now for high school. They just won their third championship tonight and beating are actually the longest rivalry in the entire country is Northeast High School versus Central High School, and we just beat them with a whopping 36-15, I think the final score was. And last year they beat us in a championship. The year before that, we beat them in a championship. So it's been a bitter battle. So you're catching me at a pretty good time right now, man. How are you guys doing?
We are doing good. Of course, you're with Dan as well, and I wanted to start out. Now, of course, let's start out with your career. You started out at a very young age. You were with CZW this whole time as a fan, later becoming a wrestler with the company. When you kind of – is this how you wanted to go out from the beginning when you conceptualized your career? What was this always the master plan?
There was really no set plan. There was no – can you hear me okay? I'm on speakerphone.
Yeah, you're fine.
Okay, great. There was no set plan going into this. I really had no idea truly what I was getting into, what was going to be, and, you know, where I was going to end up one day. And, you know, actually when I started, nobody, you know, actually thought of me actually doing the Little Mondo character. Who knew where I was going to be? Everybody just knew me as Little Mondo, and it was something that I kind of just wanted to take on, and that's what I wanted to do when I got into it. And, I was 14 years old when I started training with CZW. I had to wait 4 years to debut because of PA state law at the time was, you know, you had to be 18. And so I had to wait all 4 years. So we had no idea where I was going to go or where I was going to end up. And ultimately, I could never imagine that this is where I was or this is where I am now, what happened. So,
well, looking back at your career in CZW, what do you think were some defining moments? Obviously, when you ended it with Nick in the ring, that's one defining moment. But do you think it was the rivalry you had with Drake Younger? Was that something that you felt put yourself on the map?
That match definitely, I would say, cemented me as a legitimate wrestler as far as being able to compete in deathmatch wrestling. That first match there
Definitely took off my deathmatch career. You know, nobody. There's a lot of stuff I'm going to talk about tonight, and you know, I'm grateful to be on the show, and I love to talk to you guys, and I'm trying to hold back certain things just for the extent of the documentary coming out, but I'll be free to, you know, open up on questions on certain things. But definitely, I would say that definitely with Drake Younger, that match was took me up to the next level. Come back from Japan, you know, in June, nobody thought I was going to do a death match. Nobody had any idea I was going to get into the deathmatch wrestling because I didn't do it for the first 2.5 years that I wrestled or whatever you call it. And, you know, going to that match with DJ Hyde, starting a deathmatch, everyone kind of took me as a joke. And then that match with Drake definitely took off my career, I would say. I would agree with that, yeah. That was a big match. And there's several matches. I feel the truth myself. I don't feel like my career ever took to that level of where anyone would like it to be, of what I decided to get out at this time. And, you know, I feel like 2014 probably would have been my best career year ever if I stayed into it. You know, hit or miss the other years, and then 2013, legitimate as a wrestler, competitor in the sport, and taking it seriously. That's what I would feel would be, you know, my first real year of solid wrestling was 2013, of real decent, okay matches, and coming off with some matches that I was, you know, finally satisfied with. That's what I would say. Did I answer the question? Did I try to trail off on there?
Yeah, no, but it kind of leads to the next question, because there was a lot of momentum going to the end, of course, to Cage of Death. You're in the main event. You're being taken more seriously by the fans. You're on the same team with Tremont. You're on the same team with Drew Blood, two guys that have been with CZW for years. I mean, it just seemed like when you said at Cage of Death you were retiring, I just looked at the guy who was next. I said, nah, he's not retiring. This has to be some type of thing because it's wrestling. So, I mean, how do you go from having that? Where did you make up your mind that this was going to be it? Cage of Death 15, I'm done.
There's several factors that came into my mind of officially deciding to retire. Several of them, and to get into the glorious details of the actual, you know, shooty side of it, the real legitimate reasons I'm saving for the documentary, but a few of the reasons that amplified that would definitely, you know, aside from injuries, I've been lucky enough to not sustain any serious injuries in my career, despite all the, you know, the stuff that I went through. My spine's been bothering me, legitimately. I was actually worried about it in this match, and I knew it was my last match, and I was ready to go all out in the match. And I knew that my spine literally could break during this match. Taking that fall at the end there could break my spine because my lower spine is pretty damaged, and I haven't gotten an MRI yet because I'm worried about it. But I definitely need to get that out. So that's one of the factors. And then, you know, there's obviously the politics side, which I'm kind of like, you know, holding the back on. But the politics side's a big factor. It's almost like I love wrestling and I enjoyed it, but I knew it was my time to, you know, get out. You know, Bruce Springsteen, I'll quote Bruce Springsteen, get out while we're young. You know, champs like us, baby, we're born to run. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Pretty much look at it that way. So this is my time to get out. That was going to be my highlight right there. If I can walk away then I can walk away forever. So ultimately, it wasn't decided 100% that I was going to retire until, like, literally what we said in that ring was legitimate reasons of what happened that night. Nick called me maybe like not even a week before the show, and we talked about it, and I told him my plans. I was like, look, you know, this is Cage of Death. I'm stepping it up. I was like, if the Weed Whacker comes out, you know, I want them to freaking mutilate. I want them to destroy me with that. I was like, I'm going all out. That I don't care. I had no fear, literally nothing. And he was like begging me to not take it pretty much. And I even argued against it, and finally came down. I was like, look, if I come back and do this match and I show up there, Will you not take the Weed Whacker? And how could I say no to that? That's literally what happened. What we said is exactly the truth. Nothing, no bullshitting it. He was scheduled to come back to the States because he lived in Japan, and he actually made his flight 2 weeks earlier. I think you talked about it on your show. He made his flight 2 weeks earlier. I was listening to the podcast, and that's the legitimate reason what it was about.
Okay, I do have a caller right now. I'm going to get to them. See if they have a question for you.
And as soon as they're on, caller, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Rory. The name's Ron from Florida. And thanks for taking my call, guys. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem.
All right,
Rory.
Rory, you've probably been asked this 1,000 times, but I figured I'd just do it to know personally. And obviously, you're a huge fan. I mean, it's obvious. You're a huge fan of Mondo. You take so much from him. What are some of your most favorite matches from him? I'm not exactly looking for an exact the most favorite match, but what are one of the matches that you've liked the most?
Dude, that's an awesome question. And believe it or not, I can't remember the last time I was asked that. So that's cool because, you know, to talk about it from a fan's perspective, you know, wrestling as Nick Mondo was always fun, but being a fan was the funnest. So getting to enjoy CZW, and when I was a fan, I got to enjoy Nick Mondo. One of the favorite matches, I would say, and, you know, if you remember, would be Justice Payne versus Nick Mondo.
Yes.
At I think a higher level of Payne, they wrestled for the title. That was one of my favorite matches with him. There's several matches that I got to witness that were amazing. But I just remember that match being really cool. They built it up. They hyped it up and just going out there. And, you know, Nick Mondo never won the title, so seeing him go for it and back as a fan, I remember if he could win the title, that would have been a dream come true for anybody. It
indeed.
Was all right. Him and Masai had some excellent matches. What else do we have? There's so many matches that were fun matches to watch. The tag match, uneffing believable. I wasn't there live for that. That was before my time. I started in 2001. Mm-hmm. I got to watch it on tape. That was pretty awesome. And also going into, let's see, what was the next match? The four-way at High Stakes. That's one of my favorite matches of all time.
One with Messiah, Justice Payne, and what's his face?
Adam Flash.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, what's his face? Adam Flash.
Former
Iron Man Tag Team Champions, Adam Flash. Yeah, that match was amazing. They actually won 65 minutes. You know, or whatever it was, the whole hour being at that show. And that match, I remember top to bottom, was fun as hell. So how about you, man? What was your favorite matches?
Oh, boy. I mean, going off those lists, actually the first match I ever seen from Mondo was, you know, uneffing believable with him and Kasai, June Kasai, and Johnny Casimir and Justice Payne. That was the first match that I ever saw from him, and probably my most favorite. I mean, I know he talks about how it's not exactly the most cleanest, but I don't know, man. Something about that really clicks with me.
For sure. Yeah.
All right. Thanks for answering, okay. Rory. I appreciate everything you did.
Hey, thanks for calling. I appreciate it, man. Thank you. That's awesome.
No problem.
All right,
take
Ryan,
care.
Thanks for calling in. You have a good night. Okay, and I do have another caller, so I'll put them on.
I'm going to leave.
Yeah.
I just posted the number, so they should be calling in, hopefully. That's awesome.
All right. Caller, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from. Caller? 317 area code.
Zach Means from Indianapolis, Indiana.
Oh, how are you? Do you have a question for Rory?
Yeah. What are you going to do now that you're not wrestling anymore?
Well, what I'm doing right now, good question, is what I've been doing since I was a little kid. And, you know, a lot of people devote their whole lives to pro wrestling. And while I pro wrestled, I've been keeping up with my regular life, too. I've always kept, you know, them even, 50-50. I've been coaching wrestling right now. I coach currently two teams, a high school team and a youth team of wrestling in Philadelphia. Once we beat the streets. The other one, I just won the championship tonight. Philadelphia, a publicly champions, Northeast Vikings. And I work with South Philly High School as a coaching job, too, as well. And I also work, my father has a restaurant, an Italian restaurant that I work with in Ewing, New Jersey, Mountain Flores Trattoria. You should check it out if you're in the area. But you're not, you're in Indianapolis. So if you ever come in, feel free to stop by there, anybody. I work there, and I also go to school full-time at Temple University. So all these things I've been doing exactly while I was training and participating in professional wrestling, I would go to these you know, work, whether I had work or I had practice or I had school the next day, I would go beat up and cut up and, you know, not complain about it. That's what I've been doing. Good question, man.
Do you have another question for Rory, or?
Yeah. How'd you like working with Drake Younger?
That match with Drake Younger was definitely one of the most brutal matches I've ever been in, both times. I knew they were going to be brutal. You know, you talk about stuff that you're going to do possibly in a match and talk about stuff. Who knew how crazy that match would have been? I couldn't imagine it. I just knew I was out there to prove myself to him, to prove myself to everybody. I was like, look, man, I'm not just a joke. I'm gonna go out there and whatever's gonna happen, I'm ready for it. So let's do this shit. And it was brutal. It was brutal. I remember like halfway through the match, I couldn't see because the blood was dripping in my eyes. I had a concussion like early in the match. Get hit with the water jug, the chair shots. There's so many things in that match that was pretty crazy. That yeah, I just look back at it, and sometimes I watch these matches, and I almost think that it's like, that's not me out there. I almost forget that I was through that, and like, when I watch it back, you know, it's pretty, like, holy shit, what the fuck was I thinking, like, certain times? Like, you know, I went in there, and I did this stuff, and I'm just like, Jesus, like, that trash can easily had to be, you know, the worst thing I've ever done in wrestling as a move I've taken, and I easily could have broke my spine on that. That thing did not bend at all, and I definitely would credit that, unfortunately, to being the worst thing I've ever done in wrestling. That one trash can powerbomb, that was brutal.
Well, all right. Well, thank you for calling in. I'm going to move on because we have another caller,
nice.
Rory. So here we go.
Yeah, thanks, Rory.
Yeah.
I'm ready, man. Let's do it. Whatever you guys want to do, I'm on.
All right. Caller, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Hey, doing this, man. I got a question for Rory, big fan.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, man, thank you.
Yeah, who is your most influential wrestler to right now, presently, currently wrestling?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Who is your most influential wrestler, in your opinion, right now?
Right now?
Yeah.
Several things changed throughout my career. Obviously, Nick Mondo is the reason I decided to be a pro wrestler. You know, he was the one that, when I went, that I ultimately decided, I was like, yeah, I got to do this. This is what I want to do. I was like, I don't care what goes on. That's me. That's what I want to be. But, I mean, Undertaker's my favorite WWE wrestler of all time. I love watching him. And then if you go to the, you know, Japanese style and the independence and stuff, you got an array of wrestlers that are really influenced on me. And, you know, two of my trainers, Black Tees and Joker, I love watching them and learned a lot. And, you know, and then you go to superstars, like, big time, and you talk about, like, New Japan, you know, Dynamite Kid's definitely
right.
One of my favorite wrestlers of all time. And holy shit, he's amazing. You know, how many people has he influenced? So,
yeah.
So many people. Great. Sasuke is amazing. He's one of my favorite. Liger. There's, like, a list of people I could just keep going on about that I love to watch. And,
you know, whose dick would you rather suck, The Undertaker or Black Jesus?
No dick, actually. I would prefer not to suck any dick.
That's not what I heard, though. I heard, you know, in the backstage area, you sucked Black Jesus' dick before.
Well, there we
go. Oh, really?
Huh.
Well, hey,
no,
I did put... Hey, hold on. I did put on the thing that you can come in, ask questions, talk shit or whatever you'd like, so this is appropriate, you know what I mean? But no dick sucking happened. Unfortunately, me and Black Jesus are both heterosexual males, and we do enjoy the ladies. So, unfortunately, if that's what we're trying to get to and hoping for, I apologize. But none of that.
We have his number if you want it.
His number?
Yeah, we got his number if you want.
Hold on, Black Jesus is on right now on Facebook, and let me see. So let me see if I can message him about this.
Oh, no.
When
you mess with the best.
Called in Hell in the Cell.
That's just hilarious.
I'm doing right now.
That was impromptu.
And asked if I sucked your dick. This is what I'm actually saying to him right now. Some guy called in Hell in the Cell podcast. I'm doing it right now and asked if I sucked your dick. What are your thoughts on that?
I got a serious question about Black Jesus. Is he who he is, or is that just a character? Is he on 24/7?
He is that person. That is him. That is a fact. When I say that is a fact, we went out one night on South Street. I'll never forget this. And we're on South Street. Me and him are walking around, and there's like a restaurant, and these people are out eating, and The guy goes up to, he's walking by, and the guy leans over from where he was sitting. It was an outside seating area. And he goes, "You want to hear a joke?" Like, real, like, drunk and smug. And Black Cheese looks at him and goes, "Hear a joke? I'm looking at one." And he goes off in a promo, like, in a promo, as if, like, a camera was following him, and goes off ranting on him. And they were drinking a bottle of champagne, and he looks right at the dude. He's like, "Why don't you give me that fucking bottle of champagne so I can go pull all these bitches on South Street and leave you fucking losers alone?" He just, we had to calm him down. He just, I don't know what set him off about it, if the way this dude approached him. But he said that it was probably one of the funniest things that I can remember. I mean, tons of funny things, but one of the funny things I can remember with being him. And, oh, my God, hey, he's like that 24/7. We were in a gym one time, and we work at a Planet Fitness. That's where I go. It's cheap, and, you know, you can go out whenever you want. Yeah. But we're in the gym, and you have to have a dress code. Is the caller still on the radio?
No, he hung up after his diatribe.
Sure. He can go slice his wrist and jump off a bridge tonight if he'd like to. But, Black G is right in the gym working out together. And the lady comes over and tells him that his gym attire isn't appropriate enough because they have a dress code there. You can't wear certain things. Uh-oh. And I don't think it was that inappropriate. He was wearing, like, maybe khaki pants or something, khaki shorts and like, a wife beater. And she said something, though, about his shorts. And he's like, "Oh, really?" Drops his pants right there in the middle of the gym. Drops his shorts right there. He's wearing his underwear still, but he dropped his shorts down. He's like, "Would you like me to work out my underwear in front of everyone?" He's like, "Is this better for you?" He's like, "If you prefer, I'll happily do your wish for you. I'll work out my underwear, no problem. I have no problem with that." And he's looking at the lamb like, and it makes me laugh, but at the same time, I'm like, you don't know when to tell him to calm down, because he is like that 24/7 when he goes into, you know, Black G's mode. It comes out of nowhere, and you don't know when to expect it. Sometimes he's chilling, and sometimes the funniness comes out, some good memories. But the lady ultimately just told him, like, "You know what, sir, you can work out. You're fine. I'm sorry." Like, literally just like that, because he went off and took his pants off in the middle of the gym.
All right. I do want to let people know that we're going into overtime, so the live stream is actually going to stop here, but we're still going to continue with you. So if the stream does stop and we're in the middle of a question, just make sure to pick up the podcast for the conclusion of this. Now, one thing I did want to ask you while we had you was your time in Japan. You have always said that you went over there. It was you kind of were a young boy, and it was very difficult working at the dojo. Just explain your time in Japan and what that was like working over there.
Literally, how I describe it to people is I was an American professional wrestler who's a young guy coming up. I was put on a plane. I was told I was going to wrestle for Big Japan Pro Wrestling, which I had some ideas about. I was dropped off in Japan. Somebody picked me up from the airport. I went into the school, and next thing I know, I'm in Japan, a foreign country. I don't speak the language. I'm fighting these dudes in the ring every night and just hoping that, you know, I don't die in these matches. It was literally just in another world. It was like a dream. In a dream and then like a nightmare at the same time, because I had, you know what I mean? I wasn't over there. Yeah. The first week I was there, the first time, Masada and them didn't come over for like a week and a half, 2 weeks. So I was by myself. And then the second time I was there, Drake Younger was only there for the first week. And then I was there for about 2 months by myself. Mm-hmm. So being over there and just trying to communicate was the toughest thing. And if I spoke Japanese, it probably would have been a lot more easy for myself. You know, just getting around and speaking with people. But just to describe their dojo, I don't know if I did it last time, but there's no heat in the dojo. The bathroom's outside. It's in an outhouse. The shower is cement. There's no internet at all in the dojo now. So I would have to go to the mall, which is about like a 5-10 minute walk down the street. But I'd have to go twice a day just to, you know, try to communicate with my friends at home and my family and just to update them what's going on. Just so I could talk to people, because I live with one of the young boys, Kamatani, which I actually called God as his nickname, which is pretty funny. But we would literally sit there most of the day when we were hanging out, and it was just kind of silence, because he can't speak very well in English, and I can't speak very well in Japanese, obviously. I know phrases here and there, but most of the time we would end up hanging out like a night after they would work out and stuff, and you know, we would train during the day, and then we'd be on shows. It was so surreal just being over there. It was just like after a while, it's just like, man, I need to, you know, talk to people, and losing that connection. I made a lot of friends over there, and you know, hanging out with them, training, and then, but they would go out like at night, and it was like, I would stay at the dojo. I would try to go to the mall just to get Wi-Fi, just to speak with somebody, you know, my friends at home with English, because none of my phones work, which is the worst part. If there's Wi-Fi at the dojo, I probably would have been a lot better. One of the other Americans were with me the whole time. That would have been cool. But it was definitely an amazing experience. I mean, I can't say that I regret anything there, but, you know, it's surreal to be over there.
How different is wrestling a match in Japan for you as it is wrestling one in America?
Totally different. Totally different. There's no point where I can look in the ring and be like, yo, dude, my wrist is broken right now, or, yo, dude, I can't see anything, or, hey, ref, I don't know what's going on. I don't know where I'm at. Like, you know, if I get concussed, you're out there for however long you're out there fighting, and you don't go into the back until afterward, and then, you know, you just go in the back. You're all cut up. Literally one match, I remember Drake was over there, and he really helped me the second time he went there with me. Like, definitely helped me big time when I was over there training and just being, you know, on the right track to make sure everything went well. There was one match where we wrestled a light tube match, and it was like second match on the show, I think. Yeah. And I ended up having a huge piece of glass go into my leg, and I knew I had to be out there for the rest of the show because I was a younger guy. And the young guys, you know, you got to be right out the ring helping out right after your match. Whether you did a hardcore match or not, you go out there, you know, as long as you're not too beat up. And I had this piece of glass in my right leg, and Drake looked at me, he's like, yo, you getting changed to go out there? Like, we just got done showering. I was like, dude, I got this piece of glass in my leg, I can't get it out. And he's like, you know, try to get it out. I was like, let me see it. So I show him my thigh. There's a hole in my thigh with the piece of glass completely laying flat in there, not sticking out. So it wasn't just it wasn't just like I could just pull it out and, you know, go out there and relax. So he says, he's like, dude, you need to go out there. I was like, all right. I stick my fingers completely almost in the hole of my leg, like completely in there, trying to grab this piece of glass in there that's about like an inch long, not even. And I'm trying to get it, I can't get it. I just put my shorts on, went out to the ring. I think a week went by, 2 weeks went by. The cut finally healed up. I don't know if the glass ever came down. I don't know. It might still be in my leg. It might have came out naturally, like, you know, one time, but there's a huge scar right there. You don't see, like, a lot of scars on my legs because I have the pants on, but my legs were definitely all cut up. They were, like, you know, wearing sheets out there. So, yeah.
Another question I had was, I'm not sure, you don't have to answer this, but we're just kind of shooting the shit here. So, your brother has a lot of success in CZW. Did that ever bother you, or are you guys good?
It doesn't bother me at all. Not at all. I'm so happy for him. I mean, you know, we took different paths in life completely, and you could tell that, you know, we're completely two different people. And, you know, we're brothers, but we get along, and ultimately we're, like, completely different when it comes down to, like, certain things. And, like, I focus more on high school wrestling and coaching in the beginning of my, like, pro wrestling career and not focusing so much on pro wrestling, which I'm not going to, you know, attribute to me being better or worse in pro wrestling than he is. I mean, obviously, he's leagues ahead of me. You know, I'm not going to not admit that. He's leagues ahead of me as far as talent goes in pro wrestling, but he devoted himself 100% to pro wrestling for a long time, you know, not going to college, taking off time of college, not, you know, giving up a lot of work and really sacrificed a lot of his time just for pro wrestling, whereas I went the route of coaching amateur wrestling, which he didn't do, and really sacrificing a lot of my time for that while I was pro wrestling. So like, you know, back on the question is, like, we're good. We're 100% good. We come in, we talk. Sometimes we don't talk about wrestling. Sometimes we'll be watching something. I'll sit down. Sometimes I'll questions, we'll sit down. It's kind of funny. It's kind of like a funny relationship. When we were younger, we always hated each other fighting. I mean, holy shit, we could have videotaped some of the matches. We did it ourselves and beat the shit out of each other. Well, more or less, I would always, because I was littler, would have to sneak him or do something horrible to him. Like, when I say horrible, I mean, I've done some fucked up shit to my brother, I would say, that I deserved it when I got my ass. I broke his nose one time where little kids were outside playing in sleds, and I picked up a disc, and I threw it straight in his face because he was trying to chase me down. Hit him right in his nose, shattered it. I threw a cement rock on my brother's head, sent him to the hospital stitching. We've done some crazy stuff. I remember one time we were at my old house. We lived in top bottom floor, and we were like throwing rocks over the house for whatever reason. I don't even know what we were doing. He ended up missing and shattering one of the windows, and he was like, "Look, don't tell mom." He's like, "Don't tell mom." Of course, being the asshole I was, the first thing I did was go in and tell my mom that he just broke the window to get him in trouble because, you know, we were battling back then. But just some crazy stuff we used to do. But, yeah, we're good. Even training, like, I would go down and just totally different, everything. I would go down and, like, separate times we wouldn't drive together. Even the shows, we don't drive together. It's just how it is. Like, it's not even like we do it on purpose or, you know, it just happens.
Now, you've been in the ring with him a handful of times. Did you ever carry that into the ring?
Definitely. My first match was against him, my debut match in fucking CZW was against him. And there was a point in the match where I was so nervous. I was terrified my first match, terrified. He's been wrestling for 3 years. He was, you know, leading, like, out there and being kind of in control. There was a point in the match where certain things happened, and it flashed into my head that this is my brother out here, and it's okay to fucking lay into him, or it's okay to enjoy the moment of being able to kick his ass, you know, in this stage. We're in pro wrestling together right now. And two of the moments I remember in the match were, one, I threw a chair in his face, and I just remember picking that chair up and just thinking about all the horrible things he's done to me when I was a kid, and, like, you know, I'm going to throw this chair twice as hard than I would at somebody else that I don't know. And then there was I smashed him in the head as hard as I could with the chair. And I just look around at the crowd, and in my head, I just remember enjoying it. I was just enjoying the moment, like, I thought it was funny. And this is my payback. And then there was another point in the match where I had to pick him up for my finisher. I went to go for my assault driver, and he was facing me. I had to turn him around. And we didn't, you know, nothing was said. I picked my hand up as hard as I could, and I smacked him in the face. And I smacked him so hard, he turned right around. And I picked him right up into my finisher. Like, it was just in my head. It just clicked. Like, I got to hit the shit out of my brother right now. Take this moment, you know, while I can, because I'm getting my ass kicked, so I might as well get my shots in while I can, you know, being a little guy. Just stuff like that. We were in a match. We wrestled a handful of single matches. We didn't wrestle really, I would say, in the past couple of years. We did the 1 7-man match at CZW, which was fun. And we actually, if you watch the match back, if you're watching this, you can actually, we tease being brothers in there. At one point, when we cleared the ring out of the people in a 7-way, it was at, I think, High Stakes, maybe 2 years ago, was the match. And then we're back-to-back, and people are coming in the ring, and we're fighting the people off together as brothers. And then, you know, like, people who knew us as brothers, we kind of click onto that, and, you know, we're in there to kind of work together. And we wrestled one match in Groundbreaking Pro Wrestling, which is Greg Excellence works a lot with that. Mm-hmm. He runs it, helps run it, and down in Gettysburg, we did a match out there, and I wrestled as Rory Gulak, and he wrestled as Drew Gulak, and we did kind of a brothers match out there, which wasn't really known. They don't have, like, a lot of DVD sales and going out, and I don't even know if the match ever sufficed or surfaced to people seeing it. But I remember the match. It was, I wrestled in a wrestling singlet, not as Rory Mondo, and we wrestled a match. I don't think one move was really hit, one strike was really connected. We wrestled, like, the whole match. And I remember, you know, he was like, just follow me out there, you know, stay with me, hang with me as much as you can, and watch how the match is. And after the match, the whole crowd stood up and clapped. And it was just like a roll finish, and it was straight wrestling out there. And it like, clicked in my head then that this is what wrestling, you know, is about. It's not all about the hardcore wrestling. It's not all about the strikes. It's the story you tell while you're out there to the fans, the connections you can make. So that definitely, you know, was one of the coolest matches that I hope I can find one day. I hope Greg has it somewhere. I'd love to watch that and, you know, see how it was back then. So,
was that always something that you two tried to do, not to be, as far as kayfabe, not break that line? You were Rory Mondo, he was Drew Gulak. It was it always on your mind to keep it separate because you didn't want to live in his shadow or vice versa?
I mean, ultimately, everybody knew me as Rory Mondo, Little Mondo at the time. you know, when I wrestled the first couple of years, I didn't even use the Rory in my name. I just used Little Mondo. That's what everyone knew me as. And it's almost like I had fame before I was even a wrestler, before I even, you know, got into CZW or anything, just because people knew me for being, you know, the big fan of Nick Mondo. And people actually knew me, so that's why we kept it ultimately and, you know, took a run with it. And as it went on, I just went to the death matches, and, you know, he obviously stayed away from it, aside from like a couple times of getting hardcore or doing the one death match with Danny Havoc. We went different routes, and we kind of just stick with it, and he went his way with Chikara. I broke off from Chikara. Me and Mike Quackenbush actually had a disagreement about me doing Rory Mondo. And when it happened, I was like, look, I'm doing Rory Mondo, Little Mondo, and I'm going to CZW, and this is what I signed up for, and this is what it was. At the time, he was running both the school, was combined with Chikara, and when we broke off, he stayed training with Mike, and I kind of, like, didn't get along with him very well, so I wasn't allowed to train there for a long time. So he picked up that training, you know, the wrestling of Mike Quackenbush that you learned from him compared to, you know, anywhere else. I mean, that guy, I would say, knows more wrestling than almost anybody in the United States as a wrestler. You know, that's his life. That's wrestling. He knows everything, literally. And so breaking away from that, I don't really feel like my wrestling really ever succeeded as a wrestler, which is kind of ironic because I took off in amateur wrestling and coaching it, but I never applied it as much as I'd like to into pro wrestling, and I got caught up in it, wanting to do the death matches and the hardcore and doing all that, and that's what I really fell in love with, and sticking with it. And he wasn't. He's the straight, you know, the straight wrestler, the Drew Gulak, you know, he is. And we just took different paths in wrestling, if you look at it, you know.
Do you regret the decision to go the hardcore way, or are you happy with how things went?
Not at all. Not at all do I regret it. I mean, the documentary coming out is called Rory Little Mondo Gulak Scarred, No Regrets. That's the name of the documentary. That's what we want to focus on. In it is to prove, you know, nothing to prove anymore, but to show that I don't have a regret about this. I knew what I was getting into, the dangers. At first, I was terrified of death matches and being hurt and what's going on. And ultimately, like the last year or so, it was insane how much I had no regard of what I was going to do out there or what I was into. I was just out there like, you motherfuckers better step this shit up, because if I'm in this match and I get put out there, I don't care what goes on. I'm going to show that I'm fucking the top deathmatch guy. I wanted to be the top deathmatch guy at the time. You know, try to prove it, that I could be it. And fucking, I went out there, you watched the match, I don't care. I really no care at all what was going to happen, how bad it was going to hurt. I felt like, I really, truly felt like I was an Iron Man out there, like the real-life Iron Man, that I was going to go out there, hopefully survive my matches, and just walk away. And I'm so fortunate with what happened and how it's turned out and things I've gotten away with being out there.
All right. Well, last week we did have Sick Nick Mondo here. We discussed him, and we did ask him a question about you specifically. I'm going to play that clip and then your thoughts on it when we get back. It's only about a minute and 31 seconds. Now, the relationship between you and Rory, you guys always kept in touch with each other throughout the years?
Yeah, he's one of the few people I kept in touch with. You know, he was just a kid when I was wrestling, but toward the end, he was a good friend, you know. And he's another person. I think it was maybe only like three or four people I told that I was going to retire before the end of Tournament of Death 2, and I told Rory, you know. And I trusted him that he'd keep it quiet, and he did. And kept touch with him, and, you know, it was more just kind of a, you know, mentor-type relationship. I'd give him advice, encourage him, whatever. But he grew up then, you know, and then he was more of a friend, and I put on these big fireworks shows in Minneapolis when I lived there. I'd go to Wisconsin to get all sorts of illegal stuff that they shouldn't even sell to people. I can't believe it, the stuff that I buy. put on an amazing show, and it takes me about a week to string all the stuff together, and it's hysterical, get a big crowd of people. And so, yeah, he flew out to Minneapolis and did that a couple of times with me. And so, yeah, we kept in touch and been a good friend with him throughout the years. And so, you know, again, really felt like, you know, if this is his last match, you know what, he's earned this. And what a better way for him to go out than for me to show up one more time. So, yeah, he's been a great friend, though.
What does that mean when you hear, you know, your idol, the inspiration for you to get into this business? What's that mean when he's calling you a friend and you guys obviously bonded throughout the years and he really made that moment at Cage of Death 15 special for you?
So truth be told, Cage of Death, the real plan, and I haven't said this yet, the real plan was for me to ultimately get out of doing Rory Mondo and try to steer away from death matches for a while because I felt like I could, you know, finally do something wrestling-wise, and I wanted to start steering away from Rory Mondo and possibly go into doing a gimmick where it would be me as Rory Gulak in CZW, joining my brother with a lot of people who were anticipating, expecting, and saying and talking about, you know, from what I talked to. And ultimately, when at Cage of Death, I was going to drop the Rory Mondo character, which is the first time I'm saying this because I've not talked to anybody about this. I was going to drop the Rory Mondo character, and I didn't know if I was going to take time off or what we were going to ultimately do, and come eventually, you know, try to work in as Rory Gulak. And I don't know if I was going to do the campaign, you know, something with Drew, what we were going to work in. What happened was when Mondo finally decided to come out and do the match, which nothing planned, you know, like I said, until a week before, I decided that, you know what, this is it. I was like, you know, I got to retire now. I was like, if I'm going to get out, this is it. Like, no, like what I said in the ring, no better way to do it. Me and Matt have become very good friends over the years. And when I was in Japan, he lived over there. I visited him a couple times. And, you know, when he lived in the States, we'd visit. And he kept in touch throughout my entire training. You know, ever since I was a little kid, you know, asking me how it's going and talking to him. Or, you know, I got older as we hung out. And he's a really, really awesome person, you know, inside and outside that ring. So to become friends with that, it was just amazing, you know. It was almost, people think, oh, it's amazing to be in the ring with Rory Mondo and Nick Mondo. How cool is it for Rory? It was more cool to be out there with my friend is how I felt like about it. And, you know, it was awesome that he was willing to do that for me because I know he did not want to come back to wrestling. You know, not in a sense of not wanting to come back. Everybody wants to come back. And, you know, I know he's had some itches himself about, you know, it'd be cool to do this, that. And, you know, it was so cool that he was able to be a part of it. And, you know, I'm glad he was able to be a part of it because I know he had fun out there getting to come back, talk to everyone. And he really loves it, you know, and loved pro wrestling. So it was just a great round, a perfect experience for everyone involved. No one in the match had any idea he was in it. I think there might have been, like, one or two people. Literally no one until that day. We kept it hush-hush big time. Like, legit, we kept it as hush-hush as possible until that day. And we actually didn't want it to where he would come out until about, like, he would walk into the building. We were going to have it maybe an hour before the show. And he would come in and be like, look, I'm part of the match pretty much, whatever. Or he would just pretty much go out. And this way, none of the wrestlers could say anything. No one could talk about it. No one could see it, which ultimately a lot of people did. He showed up with me. Or not with me. We showed up around the same time during the day. We did show up. And then we showed up. And then the word went around, but a lot of people, you know, still nobody could believe Nick Mondo was there. The locker room was shocked. Everyone was shocked. And me, in my head, everyone's like, you know, coming over to me. He's like, dude, that's, you know, Nick Mondo. And I'm just like, yeah, you know, that's my friend Matt. Like, that's how I looked in my head. Like, I was, you know what I mean? It was surreal that he was going to be in the match and to do stuff with me and be out there in CZW. But deep down inside, you know, that, like, I'm friends with that guy. You know what I mean? Like, he's looked out for me for a long time and been a good friend to me. And so to go out there, as amazing as it was as Rory Mondo, is just as cool to be in there with my friend. So that's how I look at it, you know, to be out there.
This is, now that it's my turn, I'm not sure how to ask this. obviously, you just retired, so this is, I'm asking
yes,
this question.
You're absolutely right. I am a single eligible bachelor. All the beautiful ladies that have wanted to talk to Rory Mondo, you know, feel free, send me a message. I am single. I know you were going to ask that for me to get it out there for the ladies and everything. No,
I was,
joking.
Yes. But. Ladies, he's a man. No, he does not have a relationship with Black Jeeves.
No Black Keys relationship.
No Black Keys. None.
Despite crushing that fan's dream tonight, whoever called in and crushed his dreams about me and Black Keys being together. Unfortunately, we're not. So
I'm sure he was ready to go to bed with that. Anyway.
he signed off pretty quick.
Yeah. Obviously, this just happened, so I'm going to ask it like this. Are you clearing the slate of ever returning, or are you not even thinking about that right now?
I mean, there's no doubt that I'm done. To say to never return, you know, who can truly say they'll never return, because nobody knows what the future holds or what could be in the future. And I mean, ultimately, you know, my career at Temple, I'm a criminal justice major. And I'd like to go into a police work or enforcement or something. You know, obviously, if I can get into the government eventually, that'd be amazing. But that might, you know, never permit me ever again of entering the ring, depending on what I'm doing then. And coaching, really, like, that's my life, like being with these kids and teaching them and being a part of it. And that's where my heart lies. So being out there, that's more important to me than anything. Who knows? I mean, right now, that, as far as you're concerned, as far as I'm concerned, I'm done. I will never enter that ring again.
Okay, there are a few questions from Facebook, and I'm gonna send these to you rapid fire. So the first one is Chris from Facebook says, Rory versus Sabu in May, one last match. Your thoughts on that?
Wow, Rory and Sabu in May, one last match. I mean, Nick Mondo was, I think, offered this match too, and that was his dream match. And this is back in the day, and I know he eventually declined it or whatever happened. I know a couple times it was offered and put up on the table, and you know he made that decision to go away. I mean, right now, as of right now, I would have to decline it, unfortunately. As much as I would love to do something like that and come out, I would have to say no to it. No.
Well, right,
that'd be
Joe.
Awesome,
from,
man. That'd be awesome, but no.
Joe from Facebook says, "Who was your favorite opponent that you have faced?"
Joe, I'm reading these as you're reading to me. That's awesome. Joe, I would say my favorite opponent. Let's see. I'm sorry, I know it's rapid fire, but I would like to answer it as quickly and good as possible. I can. Several matches. I'd have to say Danny Havoc. I mean, being in the ring with him, it was always fun. It was definitely a fun time. We'd go out there and literally beat the shit out of each other. It was a mystery of what could happen. I would definitely say Havoc was great. And, you know, my two matches with Drake are one of my favorites that I was able to participate in. So many people out there I love being in the ring with, but I would definitely, you know, say Drake or Havoc. And, I mean, my brother, you know, in the beginning was cool, but we didn't really have any matches at the end, which kind of stinks. We could have had some real awesome stuff going out there. And yeah, I would have to say Danny Havoc as a top opponent to be in the ring with.
All right. Sam from Facebook says, what's the worst injury you've sustained in the ring? Was it the glass that you were talking about or something worse?
The most painful was there's a couple things that really just shocked me out there. There's several things in Japan that unfortunately will never be shown because, like, the cameras, like, don't release a lot of the footage over there. But one thing I took from Drake, I ended up taking Drake's landing through a barbed wire board on my head out there. And when I landed, I wore the gloves at the time. I was wearing the gloves in 2012 to protect my hands, and my glove got caught in the barbed wire. It wasn't actually my head. I mean, my head went right into the barbed wire. It was hurt. But my glove gets caught in the barbed wire, and when I get rolled out, I got pinned, I think, through the table. And then when I rolled out to try to get out of it, my arm twisted, and a nerve in my elbow, I don't know if it was my elbow or something, turned and pinched, and I couldn't feel my part of my arm, and it was like that for like at least a month while I was over there. I was wrestling with this injury, and I really didn't tell anybody about it. And then there's some several things that were just brutal, like that powerbomb in the trash can I could have died from, and the flipping off the truck at Tournament of Death 11, I couldn't walk after that. I got up after the match, I went into the back, and I couldn't walk, I would say, for a couple hours. It was so bad. And then I actually drove myself home, and I drove a stick shift at the time, so I had to shift my pedals because my friends were with me, but they couldn't drive my car. So I had the seat reclined completely because of how bad my body was driving through there. So those are definitely some of the worst things that I've ever been through. There's so many to think about in just a short time, but those are off the top of my head, I would say.
All right, and the last question I would have is, you've alluded to the documentary earlier and throughout this interview. When can we hope to see that? Because I'm very interested in it.
The footage is still being shot. Everything's still being in production right now, I mean, in shooting mode. So I don't want to rush it. As much as we got the trailer, I was very excited to get that out and put something out there to give kind of a hope for this and push it out. But I would definitely say I would hope for the end of spring, in mid-spring, you know, March or April, we'd have this thing out. That's the goal. But if it takes a little longer, I'm not going to be upset because I know that this documentary is going to be top shape when we're done with it. And it's really, really going to be, you know, I'm hoping as like a really top documentary, not just another shoot interview. I don't want to just do like a regular documentary, me talking or showing something. I really want to do something special with this. And I'm getting the opportunity to do it. I'm working with, you know, Pankos Productions on it. And we're hoping to do something big. We're hoping to do something big with this. So
nice.
Yeah, that's nice working with Pankos Productions on that. Are there any tidbits you can give us, you know, wet our palate a little bit for this documentary? Anything we should look for?
We're going headfirst into it. Everything I've ever wanted to say that I've always held back due to politics bullshit is going to be said in this documentary. And unlike a normal shoot interview, I'm hoping to get certain people sit down with me while the shoot interview is going on. And I can face-to-face talk about the issue or whatever it was about it and say what's on my mind. And I want to have the person almost right there because I don't think anybody's ever really done that before. I mean, they've had to sit downs where it's like one-on-one and they, you know, kind of shoot the shit. But they're not going to know that when they sit down that everything's unscripted that we're going to do with it. That's hopefully part of the documentary. There's going to be some other things, you know, a lot of footage of me in Israel. A lot of my personal footage of me in Japan having fun, goofing off on my trip over there, both trips. So many things that I want to do with this and kind of just make it a complete package that you're going to get when you get this documentary. It's not just going to be a normal documentary, a normal shoot interview, and you know, normal me talking, because it'd be fun to do something different. And you know, I got the people to work with, and we got a lot of stuff to talk about and do with it. So don't really know like if I can think of too much details about what's going to be done. I mean, there's going to be a lot of real deals set with it, and that's it. You know, it ends up being a fight at the end of whatever I'm talking about. It's a fight. If not, you know, people, it might be. I hope not. I'm praying that nothing, you know, bad comes out of it and all good stuff. But to be able to speak with people face to face is a huge thing that I want to do. And I don't like when people shoot on people and there's no connection. And it's stupid. It's fucking dumb as shit. It's pro wrestling. Like, if you got something to say and you want to be a fucking man about it, stop being a bitch. Stop fucking saying stuff behind people's back or behind a fucking keyboard or behind a camera. You know, confront the people about it. And that's what, you know, life's about, is confront your fucking problems and handle them like a real person would, you know.
Amen on that.
Yeah.
Well, Rory, where can people follow you to get more updates about this documentary, to, you know, just to follow your career after the wrestling?
Yeah, you can follow me. You know, Twitter is Rory Mondo. We got Instagram I'm on, which I post a lot of awesome pictures. I'm going to get a picture up in a second of us holding the trophy up of Rory. It's going to be Insta, I-N-S-T-A, Insta, underscore Rory, R-O-R-Y, underscore Graham. You can find me on Instagram there. You can follow me on Facebook at Mondo Lives On, facebook.com/MondoLivesOn. And then my website that I've been selling merch off of and ultimately have the DVD on will be RoryMondo.tick, RoryMondo.com. And that's where I sell all my merchandise, which I got to plug real quick. Is you can buy anything off of there. I got a lot of awesome stuff that I don't think a lot of people know about. A lot of cool shirts that I've gotten over the years in pro wrestling that aren't intact, that you can't get anymore, or shirts that were impossible to get. Like such as I have a shirt on there from Japan that only the wrestlers were given for being a part of this tournament that I have up there. And ultimately just trying to get rid of a lot of this wrestling stuff to try to move on with my life. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff I'm keeping, but, you know, the stuff that I'm willing to part with is up on there. And you can also get a picture of me and Nick Mondo from the moment of Cage of Death, me on his shoulders, There's a little picture from when I was a little kid that reenacts the moment that we closed with at Cage of Death, and it's signed by Nick Mondo and myself on there with that memory forever. And we actually included a piece of the UFO pants that we were wearing. We cut them up, we attached them to the picture, have them stay on there, and I'm sending those out right now. You can buy them on the website roymondo.ticktail.com, and they'll be shipped out to you signed. And that'd be awesome if you could check that out.
Definitely. But Rory, thank you so much. Congratulations on the big win for Northeast. And just good luck in everything. And you're always welcome back. When this documentary hits, just hit me up, and we'll have you back on, and we can talk about things once more of the stories come out and we have more to go on.
Hey, Dean and Dan, I just want to say thank you for having me. It was great to be back, and all the fans that called in or listening, like, thank you for checking it out. You know, check out Hell in a Cell Radio. It's a great show and great stuff that you guys are doing. I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. You remember Dan's name, unlike Sick Nick. So, but you have a great night.
I got it, yeah.
But you have a great night.
Fine, so.
Yeah, but you have a great night, and I look forward to talking to you very soon when this documentary comes out.
All right, guys, thank you. Have a good night.
Absolutely.
You too now.
Cut my life into pieces. This is my last resort. Suffocation, no breathing. Don't give a fuck if I cut my arm bleeding.
Gone from wrestling, but certainly not forgotten. And I can't wait for that documentary, Dan.
Sorry. Yeah, no, those, like the Sick Nick Mondo, I happen to be a fan of those independently done documentaries, but the fact that he's got Pankos doing it, there's going to be a little more to this, it sounds. So this could be a really, really, really good documentary. I really like those.
Shut up and take my money.
Yeah, really. Yeah, just bring it out, and here's the check now.
Now, of course, Dan, we got to move on, but that was a great interview with Rory Mondo. Thank you for everybody, the response to this.
Oh, it was great.
Not only that, thank you to the fans on Facebook, the podcast, obviously, hopefully you're listening to right now. Thank you for asking those questions on Facebook as well. But, Dan, we're moving on because the Royal Rumble, it was quite a night. What I want to do right now, though, Dan, is play a clip. And I'm going to cut it off short, so it's going to be kind of a jump cut, but a clip of the final moments there. And we'll be right back on the other side.
Sheamus says he is going to WrestleMania.
Sheamus has done it before. Sheamus wants to do it again.
He won the 2012 Royal Rumble match. And Sheamus calling for the pro kick. Batista ducks out of the way. Went to the Batista behind. Sheamus now hanging on off the apron.
He did not hit.
Roman Reigns breaks the record. Roman Reigns and Batista looking to win here. Reigns hangs on. Roman Reigns with 12 eliminations tonight. That's a new record for most eliminations in a Royal Rumble match. And now it comes down to this. One of these two men are going to headline WrestleMania. Will it be the veteran, the man who's done it before, Batista? Or will it be the upstart Roman Reigns?
This thing's been eliminated 13th. This is the chance of a lifetime for that young man right there.
Already eliminated Kingston, Ziggler, Nash, Colley, Goldust, Rito, Harper, Cesaro, Ambrose, and Rollins.
Roman Reigns, the young gun. Batista, six-time world champion. The final two men in electric atmosphere in Pittsburgh.
Oh, Batista with a spear! Batista with a spear of his own! Almost cut Roman Reigns in half! And a spear by Reigns!
Oh! Is it Roman? WWE World Heavyweight Championship.
What a showing, though, by Roman Reigns. 13 superstars eliminated by that one man.
What a match, guys. A lot of great performances in there. A lot of men lasted a long time, but Batista emerges victorious.
Now, Dan, of course, that's going back to the moment that Batista wins the Royal Rumble. The fans obviously did not agree with this decision. Dan.
Yeah, no, I was waiting for it to fade out.
Talk over it, Dan.
Okay, cool. I wasn't sure if you were cool. I don't know. Looking back at first, I was, you know, I wasn't irate and I wasn't angry, but I was like, oh yeah, why wasn't Daniel Bryan in it? And as soon as it was over, I'd forgotten about it until I looked on Twitter and I saw this huge explosion. Like, I didn't even think twice about it. And as I got to talking to you and I saw, like, the Mick Foley tweet and Daniel Bryan tweeting and...
Who is usually silent on these matters.
Right. All of a sudden, he's saying things. Like, it got to the point where I'm like, no. I think this was the plan all along. You put it more eloquently, as they're just waiting this out and they're going to pull the trigger. I didn't know what else. What were you expecting? Like, you know what my big complaint was? And it was really an unfounded complaint, and I'm going to admit to it now, was the big wild card was Kevin Nash. Like, usually I go and remember, like, ooh, who's going to come out? And they're not supposed to be there, but they're going to be there. They never promised that. They just usually throw in the surprises. I was a little disappointed that there's nobody else thrown in there other than El Torito. That was good.
JBL.
JBL. That was funny. I'll mention that in a second. But other than that, that was my great complaint. But then I immediately put it down and was like, well, they never promoted the fact that these people were, you know, coming back anyway. So that's an unfounded, you know, anger.
Certainly.
So I immediately put that out. JBL, I felt bad because I originally tweeted something not so nice because the way he was saying it, do you remember what he was saying? Yeah, remember when Triple H won from the ninth spot and the eighth spot? And I was like, shut up. And then JBL immediately turned it back around because he's so damn funny sometimes that I forgot I was mad at him and I thought he was hilarious again. And I did like his little spot with the jacket.
Well, not only that, I think the stats add something to wrestling. If you watch anything else, hockey, for example, you have
Not the stats. Don't bring up the hockey thing.
Well, it's true, though, Dan.
No, not all the stats. The one certain one he was using I felt was unneeded, but then I forgot about it anyway. I'm admitting I was wrong.
Well, I'm just saying. Stats are a part of sports. If this is sports entertainment...
You don't have to push it in further about a sport you don't watch.
Fine, baseball.
Okay, there. That works.
This guy has a batting average of .325 with runners in scoring position. Do you need to know that? No.
I need to know all those football stats either, JR.
So exactly, Dan. That's all I'm saying. I think stats enhance the product.
No, I agree with you. That's what I was saying. I was wrong.
At On Point Wrestling, I'm going to bring up the fact that this is a battle of undefeated. Matt Tremont taking on Scott Summers. Neither have lost a match.
Who cares?
In On Point Wrestling.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
But that's what I'm saying. I think it enhances the product.
I understand.
Moving right along, though.
Thank you.
Not that big a deal.
I agree.
Quite frankly, that the Bri Babies, as I have dubbed them, get over it.
Eat me.
Get over it. But someone who apparently did get over it was CM Punk, Dan. Now, more and more is coming out as time goes on. I'm not sure if you know about this, but he had a Q&A session at Wizard World in Portland over the weekend. This happened on Friday. Now, some of the highlights, and I'm getting this from Raja.com, a very reputable website. Some of the highlights was Punk said he doesn't think Sting should come to WWE. Because, quote, he doesn't have anything left in the tank, and I'm not bringing this up to dig anything into you. He thinks Sting would take another spot away from WWE's younger superstars who are trying to make it to the main event level. Also, Punk said Batista is his friend, but he doesn't feel the time is right for him to return for the same reason Sting shouldn't be brought in. Punk said it's Daniel Bryan's time, and Bryan should be in the main event of WrestleMania. He has been frustrated with WWE's direction for a while, and he feels that the writers aren't in touch with what the fans want. He has been saving a lot of money, and it would be fine if he wasn't receiving a paycheck from WWE anymore. He's entertaining the idea of fighting for USC, but doesn't know if his body could handle it at this time. And finally, Punk said his health has been bad for months, especially September through November of last year. He's had weekly MRIs and blood work done, but doctors can't figure out what's wrong. He stated he's eating meat again and starting to feel a little bit better.
Oh.
But not close to 100%. So these are some new facts coming out. This, of course, was on Friday in Portland. Of course, he went back home and watched the UFC fights on Saturday. He had the weekend off this week. Went back for Royal Rumble, was in there 50 minutes for a spot. He was one of the final four, of course, was eliminated by Kane, obviously setting up a short-term program of Kane taking on CM Punk, at least through Elimination Chamber. Apparently things were changed, and they were going to swap out CM Punk, put him into a match with Kane at WrestleMania, and have Daniel Bryan and Triple H, and this is what people are saying is the final factor of CM Punk apparently walking out on WWE. Your thoughts, Dan?
See, what he says kind of puts a different spin on the whole Royal Rumble Daniel Bryan thing. Is it a work, or is it the fact that they don't know what they're writing? It kind of puts everything on a different tone. Before you read me the Q&A answers, I was pretty sure, after talking to you and reading a few things online, that this whole thing the last couple of days is a work, period. With CM Punk leaving and the interview I watched earlier today that you suggested and those Q&A answers, I'm not too sure anymore that he that it is just in a bad state right now, and he just got sick of it, and he doesn't have to be there if he don't want to.
He saved his money. He obviously owns that beautiful condo he owns in Chicago. That interview, if you haven't checked it out, I believe it's MMAfighting.com. And it's Ariel Helwani who conducted the interview.
Great interview, by the way.
It's 30 minutes. It's probably the most in-depth interview, shoot interview, you could say, in quotations, that CM. He was holding back, though. You could tell there was a lot more he wanted to say, but he would stop.
He was very smart with the way he was answering questions, I'll say that.
When,
like, he wasn't being a jerk, but he was like, I want to. He was kind of letting him know, like, I really want to answer this, but I kind of can't yet. So,
one key thing that he did say was that Vince McMahon and he are very close, and they sometimes text each other throughout the night because they're both insomniacs. So maybe this is going to wash out. Maybe the plan is all along for him to come back. It could be a work. I don't know. There's not enough information. It looks like with more and more information coming out that he is just really fed up with things.
And
I think he needs a recharge. He's that type of guy that needs a recharge.
Well, I'm kind of worried for his health right now. I hope it's not something serious.
Oh, well, sure. The MRI thing and doctors have no idea what's going on. Sure, I can agree with you there, Dan.
Back on the Sting Batista thing, seriously, for a second.
Oh.
No. Let me answer it before you criticize me.
Well, we're running out of time, Dan.
Oh,
that's my only concern.
It's going to be quick. Let me do
We're
my
probably
thing.
Talking about it more than it will take you to get out.
He is right. CM Punk is right.
What, about Batista?
And Sting, quite frankly. It is a spot that would take up in the roster that you could give to somebody else, like Daniel Bryan, or somebody from NXT, that could would work harder for the money, you get what I'm saying?
11:48 p.m.
I loved it.
Sting comment. Go ahead, finish. I'm sorry.
No, I'm done. Fine.
No, go ahead.
I would love to see – I like Batista, and I like Sting, obviously. I would love for them both to be on WWE TV, but quite honestly,
yeah.
CM Punk is 100% right about spot, and it is kind of stupid to take up those two spots for somebody else that could be more valuable in those spots.
Well, I think if Sting comes and he – were to wrestle Undertaker, which makes a lot of sense because of the characters and the Crow, and you could cash in on that. That makes sense. It does make sense as a marketability thing. And if you take Brock out of that spot and put Brock someplace else, it still makes sense. And I don't think Brock really cares if he wrestles Undertaker or not.
Yeah.
You could even have Daniel Bryan wrestle Brock, have a better match than Brock and Undertaker would be.
Yeah.
And it would... This is the guy that Triple H has chosen to take out Daniel Bryan. I don't know. These things, they're probably still writing and trying to figure out the whole thing here. The CM Punk thing, it throws a wrench into it, but I think it shakes things up, and I think it shakes things up positively. Will
yeah.
I miss CM Punk? Yes. CM Punk lives up to the moniker. I truly do believe he is the best in the world. He's not some spot fest monkey, as some people would say.
Cool.
I think that he tells a good story. I think that he not only tells a good story, but he's one of the best at psychology. Yes, he wears kick pads, but whatever.
Some people's views are completely opposite to reality sometimes. I don't get where they come from.
Me neither, Dan, but that's neither here nor there. What is here or there is CM Punk. It does shake things up, and I think absolutely positively in a positive way. And when he does make his eventual return, because I think he will miss it, when he does make his eventual return, he'll be recharged. He'll probably be feeling better. He is a moody guy, though, Dan.
Yeah, very. He, you know, not standoffish, but very kind of like a loner. Kind of attitude.
Possibly needs medication.
Oh boy, don't I know it.
Possibly. I don't know. But, Dan, I'll tell you what, we had a great night here tonight. My final thoughts on the CM Punk thing, though, is calm down. Wait it out. You might like where it's going. It could be a work. he could come back, save Daniel Bryan from some type of beating at WrestleMania. I don't know. You don't know. Nobody knows.
Nobody
Maybe
knows.
He did legitimately leave. Stone Cold Steve Austin legitimately left. It didn't hurt his career.
Absolutely.
Or his legacy.
Mm-mm.
Personally, if somebody stands up against their employer, against things they don't believe in, I can certainly side with that realm of thinking. You can do it in your job. You can quit. Now, granted, there is a contract. Again, we're not privy to the terms of these contracts. He had a 2-year extension right after the 2011, Money in the Bank?
I think it was Money in the Bank. Yeah.
When he won the title. But he signed a contract in July of 2011. It's been 2 years. He could have met his obligations. How do we know? But my final thought, Dan, is WWE unfollowed him on Twitter. I think that's final nail in the coffin. That said,
oh boy, oh no!
When that happens, Dan, when you get the unfollow on Twitter, that is.
Boy, don't I know?
That is the nail of death. Now, next week, Dan, we will be joined by MMA fighter. He's going to be fighting for Cage Fury Fighting Championships at the Borgata in Atlantic City on the 8th. But we're going to have him just 2 days before that. We are going to have Anthony, the Animal Terrell. I was honored enough to actually introduce him to his first pro MMA fight. So this is exciting.
Nice.
This is exciting. He fought for Locked in the Cage 15. He did win that by knockout. And he has been on a tear since that day back in April of 2013. He is 4-0, and he has a 23-second knockout on his record at this point as well. A vicious head kick. So we'll be joined by Anthony Terrell, and we're also going to be joined for the 9th time, actually the 10th time, but the 9th time officially as a French interruption. It is Monsieur Oulala. He will be joining us here next week, Dan.
That I'm looking. That is always a good time, and always is a something that peps me up. Talking to him, you never know where it's gonna go.
Not only that, Dan, we get to hear this next week.
This is gonna be a big interruption, and it's gonna be French.
Oh, the French interruption! Now we're talking, huh? Ooh la la! Woo! I'm the champ! Woo!
Undoubtedly, he is Marion's favorite wrestler.
Best song ever.
And he has gone into my heart. I can't say enough good things about Monsieur Ooh la la. And his support of this program and his support of us has always been a wonderful thing.
And he's a hard worker. I mean, when those events go, he's working all day, folks.
Certainly. Certainly. Before, after, and during the show, Ooh La La certainly. If there were more Ooh La La's in wrestling, kind of like what Papadon said about Goldust, if there were more Ooh La La's in wrestling, I think the wrestling world would be a much better place, but that's neither here nor there. Dan, we had a great episode, of course, Papadon. I can't wait till the return of New Moon Rising Wrestling because Papadon will be there in full force, my friend.
I bet.
Not only that, Dan, we spoke with Rory Mondo. A fond farewell to a good friend of the show. Even though he was only here once before, we have kept in contact a few times here and there. He has always been very happy with what we do.
Good guy, man.
He's one of the guys that gets it.
Yeah.
You know, that we're here to help them get the word out, get their name out there. And that's all we're trying to do, regardless of pettiness or anything of that nature. It's about independent wrestling and trying to all rise up together to get us to get us to the next level. But Dan, great show. Where can the fine people find you?
Follow me at DanLaw83 or Obey the Puck. Monday nights at 9, Obey the... I did it twice. Obey Puck Show on Twitter.
That's right, Dan. You can also follow Omega Squad at Omega Squad. I am, of course, the Dean of Credibility, Double D. You can find me at Folsom County. You can read the blog. It's going to be updated just minutes after I'm done this podcast. I'm going to put the newest indie power rankings up. That's exciting. And I already wrote two articles this week exploring different things with WrestleMania. Make sure you check out HIACTalkRadio.com. That's the home of HIAC Talk Radio. You can also follow the Twitter at HIAC Talk Radio. The Facebook is facebook.com/HIAC Talk Radio. There is an official Pinterest. Look for Folsom County for that. Not only that, Dan, we're also on iTunes and Stitcher. And Dan, I gotta say, that's life.
That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say. You're riding high in April, shot down in May. But I know I'm gonna change that tune. When I'm back on top in June. I said that's life.
That's life.
And as funny as it may seem, some people get their kicks stomping on a dream. But I don't let it get me down. 'Cause this fine old world, it keeps spinning around. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out, and I know one thing. Each time I find myself flat on my face, I pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life.
That's life.
I tell you, I can't deny it. I thought of quitting, baby, but my heart just ain't gonna buy it. And if I did...
Filthy animal, and a happy new year.
I didn't even know that was on there. But Dan, I want to give people an Easter egg. That jerk that called in, I didn't like him too much. How dare he? See you next week, folks.
Goodbye, everybody.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.